time on the Don and Mike Show.
From Fox Football, here's John Madden.
You know, your video games, my son and I spend hours playing Madden 2001.
And I bet your son beat you.
He says, Dad, you be the all-Madden, all-time team. I'm going to be the Barcelona Dragons.
Oh, no.
And
oh, no.
He kills me.
No, that's disrespectful.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
The Don and Mike Show.
Don Geronimo and Michael Merrill Show. Don Geronimo and Michael
Merrill
Show.
You're
the son of a bitch.
What's up, guys?
Hello, everybody. You got the Don and Mike Show. Coming to you live. 4 hours every weekday. From the studio of the WJFK. Broadcasting nationwide and coast to coast. You can call Don and Mike anytime for free at 877-365-3636.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by. We will return to our regularly scheduled program momentarily. Please stay tuned.
Don Geronimo and Mike O'Mara Show. Don Geronimo and Mike O'Mara Show.
Hi. Welcome to our show.
He's the son of a bitch.
Hello, everybody. You got the Don and Mike Show. Coming to you live. 4 hours every weekday. From the studios of WJFK, Washington, D.C. Broadcasting nationwide and coast to coast. You can call Don and Mike anytime for free at 877-365-3636.
That's right.
But turn your radio down. Know who what you do call. Don't call to play the name game. No calls to rate women. Don't ask when they're coming to your town. And don't call telling jokes.
And at running back number 44, Curtis Enos.
The Don and Mike Show. You can get it. Move to your left. Move to your right. The Don and Mike Show. The best thing you're going to find. The Don and Mike Show. On your radio.
Get into it.
The Don and Mike Show.
You can call Don and Mike anytime. Toll free at 1-877-365-3636. That's 1-877-365-3636. They're ready to believe you.
Everybody loves Don and Mike.
It's the Don and Mike Show, and they'll say what they wish.
Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
Good, clean opening to the show today.
I know, that's why we put it on CD, so it sounds good.
Good and clean.
Right on.
Ladies and gentlemen, that problem wouldn't have happened if this man was in charge. You know his philosophy, wipe on, wipe off.
That's it?
Yes.
I didn't know that was his philosophy.
Son of God.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Rob Spiewak. Take it away, Rob.
I'm Rob A. Rob Spiewak from the Don and Mike Show on WJFK, and I want to know, are you ready to help our team do a big win over the Giants today? What do you say, fans?
Hey, what do you say, fans?
Phil is beside himself with excitement.
Really?
Really. Yeah, only 6 days until the superb owl. Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Jennifer Anderson and all the ships at sea.
Hold on. Run that one by me again.
Only 6 days until the superb owl.
S-U-P-E-R-B-O-W.
Superb owl.
Superb owl. That was a joke from Friday's show.
That is correct. I laughed about it all weekend. Apparently, I might have been the only one.
Superb owl.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Jennifer Anderson and all the ships at sea. And now, you love them in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Don Geronimo and Mike O'Mara.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank me.
And hello. Thank you for listening, everybody. I promise you this. We're effed up.
Yep.
But we're not as effed up as Elizabeth Taylor, okay?
Yeah.
Don and Mike Show still brought to you by the auspices of Westwood One. So think about it right now. a Hershey's candy bar,
right,
or a share of Westwood One stock.
It's a tough decision, isn't it?
They both cost the same.
I'd go with the sweeter choice.
It is a new episode we have for you on Monday, 10/22nd, and the phone number, same as it ever was.
Same as it ever was.
Oh. 877-365-3636. That's your hotline to the hits. 877-365-3636. And you know what we say now.
Welcome to my world.
Right. Welcome. I almost wasn't here today because I was in the bathroom.
Want you to come on in.
I wanted to pull a Renee Zellweger, which is really pulling a...
Christine Lottie.
Yeah, the chick that did it before the,
right.
The Christine Lottie.
Yeah, they had a picture of Christine Lottie when they were waiting for Renee Zellweger.
She was taking a growler. Incidentally. Yeah.
A big beefy growler.
Leave your cares behind.
She dedicated it to Jim Carrey.
She left it on Jim Carrey's table.
And as always, this show is built with you in mind.
Built with you in mind.
We're going to have plenty of talk today about the Dolby Golden Globes.
Best award show to make fun of, I think.
Which were on last night. Plus, tons of weekend stuff to get to. Homosexual Joseph was down at the what we're calling the homo... Hold on, I have this right. It's the inauguration, so it's the homo-guration. The homoguration?
Homoguration.
Homoguration.
Is that what they called it, or did we make that up ourselves?
We made that up.
The homoguration. I like it.
And he was there with the tape recorder. We will hear that. I know the first order of business that everybody wants to know, you know, what did I think of it?
Mm-hmm.
And
how did you enjoy it?
Mike, well, you know already.
Yeah, I appreciate you. That actually made me very happy for whatever reason. I was very amused at your call on Saturday.
Did you go?
No.
No. Of course he didn't.
No, I
didn't go.
I wasn't going to say anything to you on Friday's show when he was showing you where those, and you were saying, hey, I'm right up here. Well, what you didn't know is right up there was like a million people between you and the podium, and you would be standing for like 4 hours in bitter cold.
It wasn't until Saturday morning that we got it. Now, keep in mind, there was, I can't say that the thought was not in my mind not to go on Friday, because as we were walking out of the parking lot, Mike said to me on Friday, hey, have a good time tomorrow. And I said,
in my bipartisan spirit, I said, have a good time at the inauguration.
Very nice.
And I said, if I go.
And then I laughed, because as soon as he said that, I was pretty sure he wouldn't go.
Well, so we got up early Saturday, and Frida and I turned on the TV, and of course, the weather was crappy. It was like sleeting. It was 30 degrees. They were calling for snow and all kinds of stuff, but that was not the factor that finally turned us away from going to the inauguration. It was when they had the camera shot, and they're showing where Bush is going to make the speech, where he's going to be sworn in, and then they showed the 3,000-seat area where people will actually be sitting in chairs, and then about a mile behind that, they had these three pens, and it looked like something from the Reston Petting Zoo. And they had this cheaply fenced-in area.
Where you were all going to be herded in there with your exclusive ticket.
Yeah, you know, it was like we might as well have gotten in a cattle car, you know. I mean, it was ridiculous. So we looked at each other for a second, and I said to her, well, if you really want to go, I'll go. And she said, well, if you really want to go, I'll go.
Right.
And I said, well, you know, the seats don't appear to be anything great.
They're not really even seats.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's 8 o'clock now. We'd have to leave now, and we'd have to just stand in the mud for 4 hours.
Right.
So at that point, we decided, well, if nothing else, we've got a great souvenir. We have these tickets that appear to be big-time tickets for the inauguration.
Well,
so
it's a piece of history. Put that in a scrapbook.
So that's exactly what we did. And the answer is, after all of my big talk and bravado on Friday, we didn't go.
Well, you were the only ones in town because, man, it was packed down there.
We didn't go.
Nobody was down there. I mean, it was, they said compared to past inaugurations, I guess because of the weather, people didn't show up for this one. Because of the weather and because of the atmosphere of, people didn't want to go down and mess with the protesters, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, the more we watched it on TV, the more we just said, boy, damn, are we glad that we're not there? You know, and
it is miserable. I mean, I went down to the parade. I didn't go to the swearing in a couple of years back. And I'll tell you something. It's just a waiting game. You wait all day long to get a good seat close. You wait a long time. I guess you would have had better luck, Saturday.
And when we finally saw the actual swearing in on TV, we were trying to figure out whenever they would go to one of those long shots where they were, where you overlook with the Capitol in the background and you would see Bush and everybody sitting up on stage, we would look and try to see where we would be, and we would get up and actually point on the TV screen, and sometimes the area, this supposed VIP area we were going to be in, you couldn't even see it from the TV.
Wow.
I mean, it was simply one step better than all the schmucks who had to stand on the other side of the reflecting pool.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you would have been standing in mud, too.
Yeah, so we
talked about how muddy it was.
Yeah. So we decided not to go, and of course, I rationalized it immediately with Frieda. I said, well, if the Republican Party really wanted to treat me right,
there you go,
they would have given me one of the seats, so that at least I could have sat down. And as we watched the crowd during the actual taking of the oath and his speech and everything,
should have been up on the dais.
Well, yes. I don't disagree with you, but
I don't think there's any room for anybody up there. I think it's all political.
But I would have certainly taken one of the seats, one of the 3,000 seats that was in front. And as they panned through the crowd, I saw a bunch of people who looked at me like they just could have been homeless people off the street. That were sitting in these very important seats. I mean, it wasn't all, it certainly was not all made up of Congress people and senators and all the legislators and stuff like that. It was just like ordinary, ugly people like us.
You know, I was all sour grapes, this week, and I really had said to myself, I'm not gonna have anything to do with it. I'm not gonna watch any of it. And then I got sucked in because I'm such a junkie for that kind of stuff. And I watched the best thing to do is to watch that stuff on C-SPAN, because you watch it on C-SPAN, there is no narration, and you also pick up little bits of dialogue, like when they had their coffee right before they're going to go over for the swearing-in ceremony.
The Clintons and the Bushes.
Right when they're coming down the stairs. No other microphone picked this up, but Clinton, he shook hands. He said, F you, and then Bush said, F you, too.
That's cool.
And it was like really under their breath, but the C-SPAN microphones picked it up.
But the call that I enjoyed making the most was about 9 o'clock on Saturday morning. I called Mike and picked up the phone. He said, hi, and I said, hey, guess where I am?
And I immediately broke into laughter because I said, guess where I am right now? I knew he was home.
He says, where are you at? I said, I'm sitting on my couch.
Yeah. And then we did what we do best. We bitched about the weathermen, too, as far as whether they're going to predict the weather. And they kind of right. They deserve credit when they get it right.
No, here's why they got it right. They got it right because
they didn't get the forecast for Inauguration Day right.
No. The inauguration was such a giant story here in D.C. that they didn't have time to whip people up into the panic that they normally do. As a matter of fact, it was the second story on the news. It was, listen, we've got all this crap with the black boots and tie ball. Oh, and yes, we're going to get a snowstorm, which is why I maintain to you, if they took that same M.O., and use that when they predict the weather regularly. Look at this. The D.C. area got about 4 inches of snow yesterday.
Right.
You know what? Nobody panicked. The schools were open today.
Right.
All the roads are clear.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's cool.
You didn't have to, you're right, because of the inauguration, you didn't have to sit through any of the people camped out at the salt trucks or at the grocery stores. And nobody went into panic mode because
it's
perfectly normal.
Because listen, it was 4 inches of snow. It was nothing.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, it got here. They cleaned the streets. Everything was fine. And the reason, and in this way, I blame the weather people. And I blame them for something good. I say, the reason that Washington didn't shut down because of the snowstorm is because we didn't have dickweeds like Bob Ryan and Doug Hill and Topper shut.
Bob Ryan with his new promo. Have you seen his new promo on Channel 4? We care about your safety.
Oh, yeah.
You know, now he's a safety inspector. For God's sakes, if he's going to tell me whether they're going to get a flurry or not, that's going to make me live.
Jesus. All right, Mike, hold on a second. First call is the guy who gave me the tickets.
Oh, there we go.
Jim Parmalee from the Republican Party is on the phone now.
Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Jim.
I can't blame you for not going because it was pretty cold and wet, and I'm glad that you can use the tickets as souvenirs. But those are really good tickets. I mean, the folks back on the mall, they were literally three city blocks farther away than you would have been.
Well, then that means that I... Well, then
you were only two city blocks
away. Yeah, right.
Away.
I was going to say that.
You were about a half a block away.
No, not half a block away. I mean, there were 3,000 people.
Hey, half a block is a long way.
Well, no, he's exaggerating.
Probably about a city block, wouldn't you say, probably from the podium?
Well, you were at about half street. I mean, it was the first street. First street would have been behind you.
You know what?
The seating went out to 4th street.
I got all caught up in on Friday because you were nice enough to come, and I do thank you for that.
Were you sitting, sir?
No, I was in the same section Don and Frieda would have been in.
Oh, all right, well.
And you were there?
Yes.
How did you find it?
Well, you know, it was a bit of a distance, but considering that there were so many hundreds of thousands of people who had worse seats, I still felt good about it.
Well, you know, Christ, that's like going...
It's kind of the philosophy of the Republican Party, too.
You know, that's like getting tickets to I'll tell you, about 15 years ago, I had tickets to see the Doobie Brothers, and it was one of those deals where it was stadium seating, first come, first serve.
Right.
And we were all the way at the very back of the stadium. We couldn't see Dick. But the only way we made ourselves feel better was by saying, well, at least those people who are way up there in the rafters,
exactly.
You know, we can't see anything, but they can't see anything worse than we can't see anything. So it was the same thing. But, Jim, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, we want to continue to woo you, so I'm going to send you our monthly newsletter, which has a lot of different events, which will be inside, warm, and dry.
There you go.
Over at the NorthernVirginiaGOP.com, and I'll send that over to you guys.
Right.
And if there's an event that strikes your fancy, just give me a call, and we'll see about getting you a few tickets to it.
Just, get me tickets, give me real tickets for something important. Give me real tickets.
Those tickets were being sold for $1,000, and people were paying $1,000 for those tickets.
And I should have done it. Give me tickets for one of those deals where people who go get their names in the newspaper. You know what I mean? Like one of those dinners or something? Where
like in the reliable source?
No. The type where they actually print the guest list.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, of course.
Where they print the list of all the people who
the
were
dignitaries.
There.
Dignitaries.
Yes. Get me in there, and you're my man.
I'll see what I can do.
All right. Thank you, my
thank
friend.
Thank you.
Jim, thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Well, he was a good guy to call in today.
Yeah. Yes, he was, and he was in that section, so he gave you the best tickets he could get his hands on.
That means I got to find a higher up.
Yeah, but isn't they, you know, there are so many political figures there that the seating, I think, those are for members of government.
But I'm telling you, I saw homeless people sitting there.
There's certain congressmen that look like homeless people.
I mean, not literally homeless people, but I saw people who are not wearing suits and ties and fancy overcoats. I saw people wearing, a jacket like you've got right there or a jacket that
a jacket to you says homeless?
No, but that jacket is not a jacket that you would wear to the inauguration.
A parka instead of a long coat. If I was going to wear something to the inauguration, I'd be shirtless and wear red, white, and blue.
Well, there you go, Johnny Patriot.
But, just like Kelsey Grammer, who I saw interviewed, who said, "I'm just a flag-waving kid." Jesus, what a jive ass. F you. I mean, really, I don't think he's even a party partisan. I just think he was there.
He was the biggest available star.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's why he was there. And then he went back to, with the irritable bowel syndrome to go to the Golden Globes.
See, and I told you that they could have got stars to do that. He did it. They certainly could have gotten stars who would fly out here to make the appearance at the inauguration and then fly back to the Golden Globe Awards.
Sure.
They could have, but they didn't. So good. Let them have it.
You know, really, and the Republican Party should know this. I was thinking about this. They should really, even the people that aren't going to, donate their time, they could probably find people that aren't necessarily the same like-minded political people, but they could probably drop some coin on them, pay them big money and probably get more people. Rob's nodding his head.
I mean, or if nothing else, you got somebody with a dog movie out, like Sandra Bullock. Well, you say to Sandra Bullock, listen, we don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. Honey, you come out here, you're going to be on TV with the president.
Come on, Miss Congeniality.
Yeah, maybe someone will go see that awful movie that you're in. Hello, Don and Mike Show.
Hey, Don, I like you, was enjoying the show from the comfort of my own living room. But I got to tell you, did you catch the old feed, Dan Rather, on the CBS affiliate?
No.
First of all, he talked about you're just trying to fill time. The first motorized inauguration was back in 1821. And later on, they corrected him and told it was 1821 or 1921. But the best one was when his brother, Jeb Bush, hops in the stand, they're just announcing to people as they come to their seats. And Dan Rather says, and look, and there's Jeff Stewart.
All right, listen, goodbye. You care way too much about that. Because they were all effing stuff up. I mean,
they've got like 5 hours to pad, and they can't ad-lib 20 minutes, so of course they're freaked out.
And furthermore, I was pissed that they didn't stay more with Willie, because he put on the greatest show.
This is the best speech of the day.
What I love about Clinton, is that even when he got to Andrews Air Force Base, there's a podium there, and there's cameras there. So, you know, you would think decorum would say, you just go get on the airplane and you give the shot where you're waving.
Not him.
He stepped up to the podium and he goes, well, I'm still here. How are you doing?
I don't think he's going very far.
No.
I think he's going to surface he's not going to fade away. He's going to be doing, I don't know what he can do.
Well, I know what he's going to be doing.
Oh, yeah, up in New York.
He's going to be doing a lot of, getting his hog smoked a lot.
This is the best case scenario for him. His wife has to come back to Washington. He's got the house in New York, so he's up in New York City, and now she's down here.
And did you hear the story that because he's going to be living in this house in New York, I don't know, there's some deal with the Secret Service that he gets Secret Service following him around
for life,
but inside the house, he's not going to have like any manslaves or anything.
Right.
So what they were saying is that most likely Clinton will be answering the phone himself in his new house.
Mm.
So now it's going to be a rush to see which news organization can find Clinton's phone number and call him up and see if he's actually answering the phone himself or not.
How are you?
How you doing?
How you doing? Good to see you. Hold on a second. I got my caller call waiting coming through. It is so busy. I need a secretary.
And, you know, as he was standing on the steps of the Capitol on Saturday, I'll say this also, and keep in mind, you know, really, I guess I'm a Republican, but what the hell? Clinton looked happy. Now, he looked happy because he's leaving.
Yeah, he looked euphoric.
Because, you know, it's like, hey, if you want to take it,
here. You know, enjoy yourself.
Take the crap, it's yours. But the distinction that I noted was that when Clinton, you put Clinton next to Bush, Clinton was truly happy and truly smiling. Bush cannot manage a real smile. The best that Bush can manage is that Disney animatronic robot thing where, like, one part of his mouth crinkles up a little bit.
It's like a controlled smirk.
Mm-hmm.
It's all he can manage.
That's right.
And he looked as the weight of the job was on his shoulders and the weight of it was off Clinton's. It was the most obvious thing. That's what I liked about watching C-SPAN, because when you saw them walk down the steps, it was astonishing to me how one guy really looked like, hey, it's party time, and the other guy really was saying to the country, I'm the president. I think I was watching ABC, and it was Ted Koppel that said this, and it was, I think, the best observation that I've heard of all the coverage, that you can actually physically see when the oath of office is taken. You can see the transformation. And I swear to God, I think it was the best speech I've ever heard Bush give. And it was just to me, it just seemed to me like he was...
I didn't even listen to it.
He was more...
I mean, it was on there, but
it was more
like,
controlled than he'd ever been. And it was
the usual crap. Like he's really going to say anything groundbreaking?
Well, no, he didn't say anything groundbreaking. I'm talking about the way he said it was just in a way that...
he's a load like they're all a load. I mean, you know, they're just up there giving us lip service.
But what I'm saying is just the way he did it. The way he looked and the way he acted, it was just a different kind of thing. It's like, okay, all the crap's over now. I know I have the job, and he wasn't, you know, up until that point, he wanted the job, and there was an urgency, and now it's I got the job, and that's it.
Two other things about this, and then we'll get off this topic, because we obviously have more important stuff to discuss. First, did you read the report that on Saturday, the first thing that Bush ordered was that they go through and steam clean everything.
Right.
And in the Oval Office, everything had to be taken out.
They took the carpeting out. They put new carpeting in. They repainted it.
Except the desk.
Right.
Except the desk.
Right.
And I would urge George Bush, if you're listening now, get yourself a black light and turn off the light and go through and see how much
right.
dried spooge, how many leavens you find all over that desk. Because not only, you know, was Clinton getting BJ's in there, but I don't doubt that he was in there, you know, doing the old...
J&O?
Yeah. But the funniest thing... What, Robbie boy?
I was going to say also, don't discount, you know, the pick it, lick it, stick it, flick it factor. I think there might be some Clinton boogers around that.
However, now this is the funniest thing that I saw, and I did see this on C-SPAN, and I saw this on none of the networks.
Right.
At one of the balls on Saturday night, Bush is dancing with his daughter. Mm-hmm. Not the ugly one. One of them's kind of hot, and the other one is...
The older one is kind of with the lighter hair.
The blonde one.
Yeah, she's the older one, and then the
she's
other one...
She's kind of hot.
The other one kind of looked like a goth.
So,
you know, had almost the jet black hair.
He's dancing with her, and she has on a dress that has, like, spaghetti straps.
Right.
I swear to God to you, I saw this. I swear to God on my life, and I've not heard this reported anywhere. He's dancing with her. The strap falls down, and her teat comes out.
You saw the whole thing?
Now, it happened... In that, like, just for 2 seconds,
right?
Her teat came out.
Really?
Hmm. And I have not heard this reported anywhere, and it went by so quickly. And, of course, I'm not taping this, so it's not like I'm going to want any kind of a record of this, but I'm telling you.
And she recovered immediately, of course?
Yes, she pulled the strap up.
Right.
But I'm telling you that for 2 seconds,
wow,
Bush's daughter's teat,
oh, my goodness,
was hanging out there.
Really?
And I'll tell you something else.
Not bad, huh?
Nice looking teeth.
Wow.
Real nice.
It's pretty amazing.
Real nice.
Wow. How come nobody reported that? Well, I guess they're not supposed to.
Sure.
Yeah, there's that.
That's right. Leave the daughters alone.
Leave the daughter alone thing. But I mean, that's.
How can you not report that? That you saw Bush's daughter's teeth?
You saw everything?
I saw a nip.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the dress fell off so that just one whole side of her body was exposed. The strap fell off the shoulder, and the dress flopped over so that you could see the teat, you could see the nip, and you could see the top of the areola.
Wow.
I mean, I am absolutely 1,000% positive that I saw Bush's daughter's boob.
Oh, that's pretty amazing.
Well, okay, hold on. I got a guy who says he saw it. Did you see her teat?
Yes, I did. Well... Actually, I'm not sure I saw the actual, but I saw something pop out and her kind of make some dramatic movement to conceal herself.
Yes, it was when they were dancing. She dancing with her dad.
There you go. There's the confirmation.
Hold on. I got someone else. Another guy. Hey, did you see Bush's daughter's teeth?
Yep. Actually, it was a strapless.
Oh, okay.
She was actually fighting to pull the thing up all night long.
Wow.
They showed that. And actually, 5 minutes before, they had the designer on talking about the dresses. And I'd have to say that was pretty bad advertising for...
Listen, you got to be careful. You got to call her teeth.
I'm sorry.
Her teeth.
Yes.
Her teeth. Now, it looked to me like there was some very thin spaghetti straps, but it's entirely possible.
Nope. No, she was pulling it up all night long.
Wow. So having trouble with it all night long.
Yeah.
But listen... Then if I'm not crazy, and I did see her teeth, how come this has not been reported anywhere?
Because they have that unwritten rule that they're not supposed to, you know, the spotlight is never on the end, you know, on the first family's.
Yes, orders. But...
The president has told the press specifically.
You might see it in the Inquirer. But for the record, George Bush's daughter is a topless dancer.
Well, she is now.
For the record.
Sure, technically.
She was giving her dad a lap
dance. Man, I didn't, you know, that's... It'll be interesting to see if that's the kind of thing that might surface in some of the, you know, more reputable publications like the National Enquirer or the Star or the Globe.
I saw it on C-SPAN.
Right. Well, C-SPAN, you get everything and without any commentary, and that's what I like about it.
And, of course,
I saw it on Fox News.
Oh, so Fox News did have it.
Wow. Well, it was just during their live coverage.
Oh, live coverage, okay.
See, it was on C-SPAN, as you mentioned, there's no announcers. The only graphic is on the bottom of the screen.
But the good thing about C-SPAN is there's great miking, too. I mean, you really do hear kind of behind-the-scenes stuff, and you hear, you know, when, like, for example, when they were coming down the stairs for the inauguration, you hear the comments that are being shouted out, whereas if you're watching a legitimate news source...
Like, hey, dickwad.
You see him wink.
Hey, douchebag.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey.
You know, but otherwise, you'll hear, you know, Sam Donaldson just prattling on while they've got all the video.
You know, I can't believe... All these people now are claiming that they saw this, too. How come nobody's going... I mean, you could go with it at least in a tasteful manner. You could say... Hold on, let me talk to this lady, Rose. Hey, Rose?
Yes, how you doing?
Did you see her seat?
No, we didn't see. My mother and I were just saying that every woman cannot wear a strapless dress. And at that point, she had her back to the camera. Sort of, she was turned to the back as they were dancing. Her dress started coming down, and she caught herself. But had she not caught herself, it would have come down.
No, that must have been another time later.
Yeah, but we saw it. She caught it. She caught it.
To me like there's a chance that this has happened. That this happened more than once. I don't think we'd be getting this many calls. Maybe somebody saw it like this, and somebody saw it like you did. And if she was, fighting with this dress all night long, I mean, who knows?
The shot that I saw was she was facing the right. Bush was facing the left. And it was the flap over her right teeth.
Of a strapless gown.
That.
Kind of fell, folded down a little bit.
That flopped down, and I thought that it was a strap because she immediately went to the right corner and yanked it up.
She's probably pulling a little corner of the dress up.
Probably was.
But that, you know, go with it.
Hey,
make it like it was down around her waist and she was dancing with her arms up in the air.
Oh, and it was pierced.
There you go. There. Sweeten that story.
It was pierced. And I believe she was shooting milk from it.
Oh, God.
Hello.
You're going to hear from the president.
Hello, Don and Mike Show.
Hello, yes. I wanted to tell you about the... MSNBC has been covering that story about George and his daughter all day today.
Have they really? I swear to God, I've not heard word one about this.
Well, they haven't been showing it recently because the four of the Texas Seven got caught, so it's been pretty much understory for now.
So they got four of those guys down in Texas?
Yeah, they caught four of those guys.
Well, this guy's doing your newscast.
Yes,
right
I know. It's all right. It's all right. Go ahead.
Well, I saw the Texas one on Saturday night. I didn't get to see the Texas two, but I saw the Texas one.
How is MSNBC covering it, though?
Basically what it was, I saw a header before it came on. It said, we got a story about George Bush and about how he can't dance. So they brought into it like that. And then they showed the clip of how he was dancing with his daughter and he did a thing where he lifted her arm in the air and to do a twirl round move. And then that was when the incident happened where the top of her dress fell down.
So now did they show the teeth, the bosom?
It was really hard to tell because it looked like either it was like a reverse camera angle that was originally shown, but where it would have popped out, it appears that it was facing away from the camera, so you really couldn't see it.
So you had to be watching C-SPAN because I had a direct shot of it.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Obviously you did because, I mean, all these people calling and now, I mean, you did see that.
Yes. I saw Bush's daughter, Steve. And she's hot.
Yeah.
She is okay. I think so.
That's one of the 19-year-old twins we're talking about here.
Yeah. 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 Very hot. And who was directing that C-SPAN coverage? Andrew Blake?
He's very right. Good.
There you go. They're dancing. Now zoom in. Yeah, zoom in.
Hello, Don and Mike Show.
Hi, Don and Mike.
Hi.
How's it going?
Great, thanks.
Obviously, I was watching the wrong program, and I didn't see near as titillating an experience as you did, but during the swearing-in ceremony, did you notice the focus of George Sr.'s attention? The camera panned to him. He was fighting with a pack of nuts or some kind of snack material in his lap, couldn't get it open, took it to his mouth, used his teeth to tear it open.
I didn't see that.
Yeehaw.
Man, I missed that.
So much good stuff happening.
That was the greatest point of the whole speech, I thought.
All right. Thank you, my friend. God damn, a lot of good stuff happened, I guess.
Wow, that's pretty intense.
Hello, Don and Mike.
Hey, Don and Mike.
Hey.
How you doing?
Great, thanks.
I was wondering if you guys saw the naked Bush on the parade route. Now, there was a lady who was protesting fur who had a big sign. It was covering her top half, but she was sitting up like on somebody's shoulders or on some kind of platform, and you could see her bush.
Did you see the egg?
Yeah, on it on Channel 9.
Yeah, the exit is far. Yeah.
You really had to. Even when they slowed that down, I said, now look to the left, and they do the little circle thing, and that's, that's when you see the exit.
You mean a woman was... They actually showed her cooter on the parade route?
They showed it on Channel 9. They didn't say anything about it. They were, you know, they had like two screens going. And they were talking about the other screen, and they were panning around the crowd on the other one. And they came across this girl. She had a sign on that said, you know, no fur. And the sign was covering her top half, but she was naked from the waist down. And they just had a clear shot for about 30 seconds or so.
Wait a minute. She was like on the parade route?
She was... Like back where the protesters were, but she was up on somebody's shoulders, or she was sitting on like a ledge or something.
Wait, if she's on somebody's shoulders, can't see if she's
the head would be blocking her cooter.
Right.
No, I mean, if she was on somebody's shoulders, she would be like on two shoulders. Basically, you could see her legs, you could see her cooter.
You could see hair?
Yeah.
We're going to need verification on that one.
Absolutely. Yeah. There seems to be a lot of nudity at this inauguration.
I think the whole thing was run by Ron Jeremy.
All right. Thank you.
I was watching a lot of Channel 9 coverage, and I don't believe that, because don't you think Mike Buchanan would have mentioned that?
Yes.
I really do.
Hello, Don and Mike Show.
Yeah, Don and Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah, calling regards to a picture on the front page of the Modesto Bee in California, where it shows Jenna, Bush's daughter, actually trying to cover it up. You didn't see anything, but he must have seen it too, because he was quite flustered also.
Wow. Hey, there you go. I don't doubt this is a... significant. You know, you...
I'm telling you, I saw it.
Right, right.
But I didn't know that it was getting any kind of media play.
Well, like I say, it was on the front page of the Modesto Bee.
All right, Buzz.
And you didn't see anything, but you could tell both the president and his daughter realized what had happened, and they were both quite flustered, so...
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Wendy.
She's hot.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, she is.
Nice rack. Hey.
You know Lynn Cheney, the vice president's wife?
Yeah.
Her dress?
Yeah.
No back at all. Wow. All the way down. I mean, everything. You saw everything.
She's got one gigantic ass. A Cheney's wife does.
Yeah, it's great ass.
I mean, you could get lost in that lady's ass.
Oh, boy. In my dreams.
Hello, Don and Mike Show.
Hey, Don.
That's like the Blair Witch Project. You get lost in Lynn Cheney's ass, man.
Josh!
Hello. Over here, Don and Mike.
Yeah.
That woman was naked. She was on Freedom Plaza, by the way.
This is Homo Joe.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Hello, HJ.
She was naked on the Freedom Plaza with all the rest of the protests.
How are things at the inauguration?
It was terrible. It was really kind of intense.
Oh, really?
All right, and I think we have a tape of Joe getting into some altercations with people.
Oh, it was kind of interesting, I'll say the least.
But, Joe, you did see the woman bottomless showing her...
When she first got there, she had, like, a sweatsuit on, and she took everything off just as the president was going by and had that sign up.
All right, thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later when we hear your tape.
All righty, bye-bye.
And, Buzz, see if you can find this, ModestoB.com.
Their page is blowing out.
Joe sounded flustered.
He must have been involved in some of those conflicts with police.
Hey, let me see what I got here. I've got the log sheet.
Get off my leg. Get off my leg.
Joe reads signs. Joe with angry youths and a permit.
Ooh.
Joe with an angry cunny. Joe with an idiot man. Joe booing George Bush's limo.
this could be the best Homo Joe tape yet.
Protesters who won't talk. Right. Booing the Marines. Angry old man, gay chanting, booing and chanting.
Hey, this sounds good.
Okay. Great. Yeah, we'll hear Joe's tape about what happened.
Right in the middle of the protest.
Yeah. Homo Joe is there.
Homo Joe here.
Covering it for us.
I hate the conflict.
Hello, Don and Mike Show.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi, we're great, thanks.
Two things. One, Jim Engel on the Fox News Channel spent a lot of time talking about the Bush woman there. And
what Bush woman there?
Which the woman? Naked one.
You mean the daughter?
No, the protester.
Oh, okay.
Because in his own words, he was riding on the back of this stupid truck, and it was the best thing to happen all day.
So you're not talking about George Bush's daughter who let her bosom be exposed. You're talking about the woman who took her pants off.
Right.
Gotcha.
And Fox News spent a lot of time talking about her.
Of course. That's why they're Fox News, sir.
The other thing, a good friend of mine is a Marine that had to stand out there on that parade route.
Yeah.
And I felt kind of bad because no matter what side you fall on politically, there was no call for him to get hit in the head with a battery.
All right. Well, thank you.
Maybe somebody thought John Rocker was going to be there.
Hello. Don and Mike show.
Don and Mike, my brothers.
Yeah, hi.
How you doing?
We're doing great, thanks.
Hey, look, I know you probably missed Don, but Mike might have seen on CBS that morning of the parade when they had their church service. I guess online they had their news camera set up in a perfect shot. So when Bush's daughter got out of the car, the limo, it was a straight-on crotch shot.
There we go. Did she have panties on?
You couldn't quite tell, but she had that little teeny mini skirt, you know, with those nice high boots on. And it was just like, it was just fabulous. I was like, yeah, this is starting off great already.
All right, thank you, my friend.
Thank you, brother.
All right, thank you for the call.
Not a problem.
Goddamn.
Don, you probably didn't see this, but Mike did.
Yeah.
A full-on crotch shot.
Right. Well, I'm going to try to find you. Buzz can pull up this newspaper. If anybody out there knows a newspaper that actually covered this story, because I thought I had a scoop here. Because I knew of no one talking about seeing Bush's daughter's teeth.
Pretty amazing.
But if you got a picture, let us know about it. Let's clear the lines out now. See if we can give away $500, what do you say, with the secret song. Secret song number 4, it lies straight ahead. Call Lisa. She's standing by to take your call. If you're number 100, our phone number is 877-365-3636.
This is the Don and Mike Show.
That night was my son's birthday party. My wife invites the priest. He's always at the house.
Hey, Tony.
Hi, Don.
You like creme anglaise?
Hey, you bless it, I'll eat it.
She's not coming.
Who?
Grandma just called. Started crying and hung up.
She needs a purpose in life.
Well, your mother is tougher than you think.
So what, no f***ing DD now?
Hey, Don and Mike, you know, I heard you were having a party, and you're trying to get me to go. But I'm not going to go if there's no f***ing ZD. Because, you know, it's just not going to happen. Thank you very much.
They'll splash the pot with every if they please.
Right.
Don Geronimo and Michael Mara.
We sure will. Friday, we'll be live in Tampa Bay for the Super Bowl. Our Super Bowl show this year brought to you by Geico. For one 15-minute phone call, it could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Maybe they give me a couple of tickets for the game. Being as usual, being dicked around by Ken Stevens on that.
Well, that's a surprise.
Yeah. Oh, and remind me. I got to tell you something else about how crappy this company is.
Oh, good.
But first, let's do a contest here. Hello, Don and Mike Show.
Hi, I'm 100th caller.
Yes, yes, you are. Hi, what's your name?
Lisa.
Lisa, hello, where are you calling from?
Wichita.
Okay, this is a problem. I'm going to tell you why this is a problem.
Okay.
Well, first off, just let me say, the problems of this company, CBS...
Are multifold.
We have a very limited budget already on this show, and we've already been told that the budget that we've had for the last 5 years has been eliminated.
Hey, good. Well, that's what number one ratings will do.
Okay, so, wow. You know, I'm going to have a meeting with them and I'll get the budget back. I was told today that the new policy is that CBS will not mail out prizes. Now, keep in mind that we have...
Excuse me for just 1 second.
Yeah.
Just give me 1 second to die.
What? Okay. We
won't. 33 cents?
We have a national show, and I said, but we've got to be able to mail prizes. I said, no. Not even to people from Washington. The station is now refusing to pay the postage. So until we get this resolved, I'll be paying for the postage to send out prizes on this show.
Good God.
That's how cheap they are.
Nuts.
Now, keep in mind.
What the hell is going on?
Keep in mind that they've taken away our promotional budget, and it was not large to begin with. And they've now decided that they have to save money by not sending out prizes.
I tell you, they're really behind you around here.
However, how'd you like, listen to this one. For the Super Bowl, the same company that refuses to pay postage to send out prizes, they have taken... 2 DC-10 jets. They have completely torn out all of the insides to make these 2 DC-10 jets into luxury first-class planes so that the whole plane is first-class. One of the jets is going to be for CBS stars who are going to be at the Super Bowl.
Right.
And the other jet is for CBS executives who are going to the Super Bowl.
Of course. That's worth it. That's worth it for one game.
So, they don't want to pay 33 cents to mail this lady her prize, but it's okay to take millions of dollars to buy two DC-10 jets, just trash out all of the insides.
DC-10's a jumbo jet.
Yeah, of course they are. Well, Mike, you can't expect Ray Romano to fly commercial first class to the Super Bowl.
Oh,
he has to be on the private CBS jet.
Oh, wow.
And, Mike, you can't expect Les Moonves to get on a commercial plane and fly first class down to the Super Bowl. He has to be on a special plane.
So they're thinking that by eliminating our postage,
well, I don't know.
Our 33-cent stamp, they're going to be able to get the... Yeah, that sucks.
You draw your own conclusion.
Well, that's a shame.
But listen, I'll get it worked out, but here's what I tell you.
Patricia Heaton will probably be on the plane.
What a dick company this is.
Unbelievable.
And the only spiff that I've ever gotten from them in the 10 years that we've gone and done the Super Bowl shows
right.
is that everybody else leaves before the game.
Uh-huh.
I actually stay and go to the game.
That's right.
Bart and I go to the game. It's a big deal for us. We like going to the game, and it's the one gift that this company has given me.
That's kind of like your yearly bonus.
Yes. And listen, I got news for you. It's not like I'm sitting on the 50-yard line, okay?
Right.
I mean, I get nosebleed seats.
It's just technically a ticket to the game.
Yes.
And, years and years ago, when I went to the game, I mean, these are way up high, these tickets.
Yeah, well, the game is Sunday, and today's Monday, and there are no tickets yet.
Oh.
And I inquired into that, and I was told that perhaps I should call a ticket broker.
Well, yeah, that tells you one thing right there.
Welcome to CBS. But now listen.
That's basically saying, well, F you.
Right. But, okay, so they don't want to buy me tickets for the Super Bowl. All right, that's been a spiff. I can handle that. You know, I'll buy the tickets for Bard and myself to go to the game. But, wait a minute, hold on. You're going to take away our promotional budget, and you're going to be so friggin' cheap that you have a new policy that we don't mail out prizes, yet you're buying two DC-10 jumbo jets. And you're completely refurbishing them so that they're first class in the whole plane, just so executives and CBS stars can fly to the game?
Hello, stars.
Maybe after the game they could use the jets to deliver our prizes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bunch of crap.
What are they going to do, sir? But seriously, I mean, what will they do with the... How many functions, seriously, a year...
None.
...do you have, like,
None.
All the CBS stars hop on a plane?
None.
The planes will be free until next January's People's Choice Awards.
Or the, you know, the World Series.
Yeah. There's
no, World no, Series World, the World Series game. On Fox.
It's not an event.
Okay. And the World Series is not on CBS.
What the hell's going on here?
So this is a one-time thing.
Mm.
Hey, listen, hold on. I promise I'll come right back to you for the contest.
Okay. Uh-huh.
I promise. I just want to get this from Bobby.
Hang on.
Okay. About why we're not paying postage. Okay.
So we still have prizes to give away, thanks to Tammy, mostly. But just no postage to send them anywhere. The lovely Miss Bobby is occupied.
Bobby's phone number is busy. All right. I'll get back to her after we do the contest.
Very good.
But listen, regardless, the prize that you've won, I'll pay this out of my own pocket.
That's very nice of you.
The VHS copy of Me, Myself, and Irene, and also the CD soundtrack.
Oh, that's not going to be your average letter, Don.
Okay, which cost me $1.50.
It's going to be $1.50.
A buck fifty.
Send that along right now.
Me, Myself, and Irene now available on DVD and video. Rent it tonight or buy the special DVD available January 23rd. And you'll play now for $500, which incidentally is not out of our promotional budget.
Very good.
Which comes, of course, from our sponsor, Main Street Title.
Yes, the entire show now being underwritten.
Yes, that's the way that it is.
Viewers like you.
We will give you a chance to win $500 now. This song that we're going to play for you, I will give you a hint. It is from the 80s.
Ah.
It was a top 10 record. Please give us artist and title, and you'll win the $500. And don't answer until Mike sings like...
SDJ.
Oh, yeah.
Sammy Davis Jr.
Gotcha.
We wish you Godspeed.
Caller, name this secret song.
God, I love that song. I don't know about you, Rob. I was singing it all weekend. Yeah. Love it.
What a great song it is.
So popular.
Number one record it was.
Without a song. Yeah, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
This is a little Sammy today. I got motivated.
For $500, what's that song?
Jump by Van Halen.
No.
No.
But an excellent guess. And we thank you. Please don't forget that every guest gets
a clue for you.
A clue for you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. And don't forget, when you get that Me, Myself, and Irene thing.
You bought the stamp.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Where did you hear about the Jets? And I don't mean the football team. I mean the Polynesian band.
Can't tell you. I can't tell you on the... I can't tell you on
Is
the...
Is that inside, not for public consumption?
Uh-huh. Something I've known about for a while.
It's pretty amazing.
Something that, frankly, I didn't give a rat's ass about until I found out they weren't going to pay for postage. And now I'm trying to call...
Hi, it's Tim McClure. I can take a call at the sound of the tone. Please leave your name, telephone number, and the time of your call.
Yeah, why be at work? Why be at work, you dink?
All right, let's try the general manager.
Charles Broyhill's making his way into the studio.
Hi, Charlie.
I was going to say, Jimmy has to be there. He's got to be at his desk.
Yes. Oh, what, to run the dump button?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't pick up the phone.
Yeah, I know. And they're looking at ways not just in reducing postage or eliminating mailing things out, but looking at ways to cut costs.
Yes.
And as I said to Jimmy, that means not mailing things out. There isn't an alternative.
What does it cost? We give away 4 prizes a day.
But you have to buy an envelope to put the prizes in.
Has anybody here gone back to the storage room? There's like boxes of envelopes.
They're used.
That have already been paid for.
Right. Yeah, but we can't buy more. But there are 20 million paper clips back there.
And now the general manager is not picking
up. He's on another line. I was just in his office.
Oh, okay. All right. Hold on. Let me.
This is pretty silly. Try Bobby again.
She's up.
Talking to Jimmy.
All right, let's try Jim McClure.
Hello.
Hi. Here's the de facto program director.
Sorry about missing your call earlier.
Can you explain to us why why you are not paying to send out prizes anymore?
I just heard about it today that we're supposedly not allowed to buy any new envelopes, which I think is absolutely ridiculous.
Where did that come from? All the way from the top?
I believe it did.
Wow.
But I will join you and buy envelopes with you out of our own money, because I think it's absolutely ridiculous that we can't buy envelopes.
Well, you know, if they just took one seat off one of those jumbo jets...
Absolutely.
They could probably buy a bulk of envelopes. So is it the postage that's the issue, or is it the envelope?
I think it's the actual mailing envelopes, because they're a bit expensive, because they're big and padded.
How much does an envelope cost?
How much does one of those cost? What? One of those, like, bubble wrap...
Office Depot catalog, if you want me to look.
Yeah. This is amazing.
So it's not the postage, it's the envelope?
That's what I've heard.
That's what I've heard. Well, Charlie, what did you hear? Was it the postage?
I've heard it's the postage because it did go up a penny to 30.
Hey, is there a memo? Was there a memo sent out? Was there...
This is all just...
It's in the planning stage. They want to look for ways to reduce costs.
And somebody told somebody that we could no longer afford to send out prizes.
We've already cut our giveaway budget.
It seems to me that a directive like that should, you know, be formalized. I mean, you know, otherwise you get this situation happening. You know, I mean, if a memo comes out, something concrete, but it's like...
Jimmy, how much is one of these envelopes?
I'm trying to find the big padded ones, but it looks like for a box of 100, it's like maybe $30.
30 cents each.
30 cents each.
There you go.
30 cents each. So if we give away 4 prizes a day, we're talking about $1.20 a day.
That's what it seems like.
Or less, because sometimes a smaller envelope is used.
Tom, what did this show bill last year?
Other than that.
Jim, you would know better than I, but I heard it was well in excess of, well...
I heard a lot and lots and lots and lots.
I heard well in excess of $10 million.
I have no idea.
Yeah, and go crazy. Add the postage to those envelopes, and it comes to a whopping $2.48 a day.
Oh, here's some real padded envelopes. For a 25-pack of the real big ones, they're about $19. So it's a little bit under $1 a piece.
There you go.
So even the company. So roughly we're talking about on our show, if we have 4 giveaways a day, $4 a day. We do 5 shows a week. So you're talking about $20 a week.
For the big ones, yeah.
Right.
You know, they could reduce cost if they just took out one of these delay machines that they have.
We've got the delay machine down here. Charlie's got a delay machine. Jim right. McClure's got a delay machine.
Now those pay for themselves.
Yes, they do.
Why don't you see where Line Wand is?
Well, you could have cut costs by not buying so much new furniture. Oh, I'm sorry, they don't buy new furniture.
That's right. Why don't you see where Line Wand is?
He's in his office.
Would you ask him to come in?
He's sure. Probably on my other line now.
Thank you. I mean, these are ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to do that, you bring in there are intelligent ways of doing that. I mean, you can cut costs, but you don't start with willy-nilly just coming, hey, there'd be an idea, yeah. And how did this policy come through?
How about stopping the salespeople from going out to their three martini lunches every day?
How about rolling blackouts?
There you go.
There you go.
Perfect for a radio station.
Sure, overnight when not many people are listening.
Exactly.
God damn, that's a pisser, isn't it? I mean, the fact that our budget has been slashed, that's something that I'll take up with them behind the scenes.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's our general manager, Alan Linewald.
Here he is.
Making his way into the studio right now, looking wonderful in a brand new suit.
Alan.
Yes, sir.
You're not buying envelopes?
This is news to me.
Well, you're the general manager.
I understand. I'm going to get to the bottom of it.
Good.
Because what we heard was, you're not buying envelopes, and you're not paying postage anymore. Because it's too expensive.
I will find out.
Where'd the directive come from here? Oh, really? The number one guy?
No.
I'm not afraid of Miss Bobby.
Okay.
It came down from Miss Bobby. That's okay. Miss Bobby knows I love her.
Not just from her, though. I'm sure that she was getting pushed from someone else.
Right. So you going to talk to Miss Bobby about it? Alan?
Oh, me?
Yeah, you.
Yeah, no,
I'm talking to my producer.
I can't tell with your sunglasses.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Listen, can you make our listeners a promise that you will continue to buy envelopes and buy postage so that we can mail out prizes?
I think we can make that promise.
There you go.
Okay.
Fine. Done and done.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Way to manage.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Alan.
There, Mike took his glasses off for you.
Bet him directly.
Damn cheap.
Wow.
Jesus Christ.
Cheap bastards.
Yeah, I'm liking any policy.
He's taking us to lunch on Thursday.
Oh, yeah. We got our lunch on Thursday. We're going to have to be discussing our promotional budget.
I don't have to go, do I?
No, you are not connected.
Oh, thank God. See, don't do that. When you both talk to me and you look at me when you said that, it was like you said, we've got our lunch, and I missed a beat here for a second. I don't have to go to that lunch.
No, it's just to get the money back.
Who are you having lunch with, Miss Bobby?
Alan.
Alan.
And Alan?
Just Alan. Bob.
Oh, just Alan?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
What, do you think she should be there, too?
No. No.
Hold on, just calling us. On the inside line.
It's ringing to Miss Bobby.
Oh, it's ringing to Miss Bobby.
Hello.
Hi, Miss Bobby.
Hello, darling.
Don and
Hello.
Mike.
Hello.
Hi there. Hey, listen.
Hi.
Can you tell us where you heard this stuff about no more postage and no more envelopes?
No, well, I just heard a rumor that I had talked to Erica when she put in the PO for envelopes, and I said that these are awfully expensive envelopes. We need to research and see if we can do it a cheaper way. And I signed the PO to get the ones that we needed right now. And then she said that I said no more, that we can't order any more envelopes. And I never said that.
So it was a miscommunication.
Oh. Yeah.
Well.
All right.
Okay.
Sure.
What, Charlie?
I'm sure it was.
Oh, okay. Good. Well, that's it. And then problem solved.
Okay, because I had heard it a
different
way.
Envelopes for everybody.
I heard it a different way.
Take a few home.
So we could give away, if we wanted to today on the show, we could give away envelopes, right?
Oh, yeah. Let's please give away those expensive envelopes.
Who doesn't want one of those?
Right. I was hoping to get a few myself.
How expensive, Bobby, are these expensive envelopes?
A couple of bucks a piece.
Well, we just found out a way that we can cut that in half.
How's that?
Jim McClure was researching it with me. and we came up with probably a little less than a dollar an envelope.
Right. Christ, we could probably go to Staples and buy them cheaper.
I think that's where we're getting them from.
Well, then we could go to Office Depot and
that's
find
what
them.
Jimmy was looking. Was when I told him to look in the Office Depot catalog, and at my suggestion, I'm just trying to look good for Miss Bobby. He picked one out for under a dollar each.
Well, I'm glad you're right on top of stuff and really concerned about the department up here.
Thank you, Miss Bobby.
No.
We're just concerned about giving stuff away on the show.
Yeah, so we can still send stuff out, send prizes out to our listeners?
Absolutely.
Okay, fantastic.
I live for that.
What happened to our promotional budget?
For promotional budget.
Exactly.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.
You know what? We're not being told the truth.
I have found the only person I think in this entire stratosphere that you, Charlie Broyhill, are afraid of is Miss Bobby. You,
oh, not at all.
You have an interesting demeanor.
Not one bit am I afraid of her.
you didn't like speak
not a
up.
Fan.
When there was some issue as to whether that was the way it happened, you went, all you said was, sure. Was she not telling the truth?
Did you hear her swimming around that one answer?
Yeah, no, listen. I mean, no one wants to say anything to make hard feelings around here.
Of course
I never do.
But it sounds like, but the problem is now solved. I mean, if there was somebody that came out with that directive.
Let me just say, I don't believe either of the people we've just spoken to.
So you think that we are eventually not going to have envelopes, and you're going to have to pay for the postage?
Yes.
Really?
Lisa's going to have to deliver every prize herself.
Yes.
Drive to the listener's home.
I really do believe that.
Wow.
Yeah. I do. Because they're cheap bastards here.
They really are.
Now, that's horrible.
But they're awful.
Okay, thanks.
So please don't connect me.
Okay.
I hate this crap.
What a bunch of hooey, isn't it, really?
It really is. A lot of people don't know. Hey, it wasn't my fault. I've never heard more buck passing in my life.
Hey, but I'll tell you this company had no problem getting those two DC-10 jets.
No.
You know, so the Doris Roberts can fly first class to the friggin' Super Bowl.
Of course, dear.
Yeah.
It's my DC-10. Hey, but you know, in CBS tradition, they're DC-10s.
What, is that a bad plane?
Yes, it's a bad plane. It's been documented. I mean, they still fly them, but I mean, they don't make them anymore.
Oh.
Okay, they don't make them anymore. I think the last DC-10, correct me if I'm wrong, was probably manufactured, mid-80s?
I think so. I think that's right. Late 80s at the latest.
Late 80s at the latest, probably.
Well, there's typical CBS.
Yeah, of course, they're used planes.
You buy an outdated plane.
Right.
You just scrape out the inside. You put some nice fancy chairs in there.
Sure.
And, you say, hey, Ted Danson.
Come
here. Hey, Judging Amy. Come here.
And, you know, they've been making DC-10s for decades.
Hey, Punched by an Angel. Come have a seat.
And you know the DC-10s that they got aren't going to be the last ones made.
Hey, wouldn't it be fitting if that plane crashed?
Oh, God.
Heaven forbid.
Heaven can wait.
Wouldn't it be great? Imagine that.
Sure.
The entire CBS lineup.
Well, then there'd be a very special touch by an angel.
Wiped out. Wiped out.
Does that mean all the stars are going to be on there like carnies?
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's so jive.
Yes. Wow. This bulletin just into CBS. Ray Romano, Kevin James, Patricia Heaton, Ted Danson, whoever that guy is on CSI, Chuck Walker, or well, what's his name?
Norris. Walker. Chuck Norris, Norris. David James Elliott, Catherine Bell, Sammo Hung, he's probably still in the stable.
It'd be like Jim McKay at the Olympics.
They're all gone.
Oh, God. They're all gone.
On a lighter note, though, the Don and Mike Show will be sending out the prizes in wonderful padded envelopes.
And CBS would love it. You know why CBS would love it? Because it would mean, hey, all right, so all those stars are dead. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
We could run Survivor every night of the week. Because Survivor don't cost us a dime to put on the air.
Yeah, and then they put on more reality programming. You'd never see another star because if you had another star, you know what that cost us.
Right.
And look what happened. We didn't have insurance.
And they could do a miniseries called No Survivor.
No Survivor.
You know, who knows? This could be some kind of a grand plan by CBS. This could really be the ultimate cost-cutting thought.
If I'm Ray Romano, I'm not setting foot on that plane.
You know, that actor...
Well, Jess, they get off cheap.
Right. That actor strike is looming. Maybe this is CBS's way of heading that off.
Sure, absolutely. Have all reality programming.
Imagine that they have a meeting and they say, here's the deal. Okay. Who's a pain in the ass of this company? Ray Romano, he wants a raise? Put him on the special DC-10.
There you go.
Craig T. Nelson?
Sure.
Put him on the DC-10.
The district. Star of the district.
Fantastic.
And it'll be like a real-life Castaway.
That's right. Dick
Only there Carter. Will be no survivors.
Yeah, no survivors.
Dick we'll go Carter's into last words. Do you smell jet fuel?
How?
Poor Bob Barker would be on that flight.
No.
Yes.
Oh, it's very complicated.
They're dicking him around, too, you know.
Of course they dick
Bob Barker
around.
There.
Bob Barker, yeah. No.
Yes, no. Is she right?
Von Roddy, sit next to me.
Is she right? Is she right? She right?
No.
Is she right? Is she right? Is she right? Is this plane going down? Is she right?
Bob Barker. That would really be Plinko.
We better place a call to some of our CBS friends.
Yeah. Warning.
Like that guy who is Raymond's brother.
Yeah, what's his name?
Robert.
He plays Robert. What's he play?
Brad
Garrett is his name. Garrett. We should call him.
Not going to get on that plane.
We should call Kevin and we should call Liam.
Yeah.
And we should tell them that we're pretty sure that plane is a death trap.
Yeah, I wouldn't get on that plane. It's an old plane.
It's the plane, let's face it, the plane is, the name of the plane, you know, sometimes they name planes. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they stood out there with a bottle of champagne. I christen thee Cost Cutter One. Break a bottle of champagne over the nose of the plane.
You hear it like rattling down the runway.
Man, oh man, probably as old as the Wright brothers.
Hey, it's been completely remodeled on the inside.
Yeah, it's like painting a pile of dog do.
They're going through the checklist. Okay. Tony Danza? Here. Great. Put Tony in an upfront seat.
Right. We need a new engine on now. We need engine number 3. We need a new one. Oh, don't worry about it, but put some good leather in there.
Jerry Stiller?
Absolutely.
Have a seat.
Who's the pilot going to be?
Okay.
You have to get some, like, sighted alcoholic pilot. Everything's going to be just fine.
That'd be Rod Roddy.
Yeah.
You let Rod Roddy from The Price is Right fly the plane.
Come on now. We're ready to take off. It's going to be a great time.
Rod Roddy assisted by Diagnosis Murder's Dick Van Dyke.
I can't see the altimeter. Fantastic.
Okay. Welcome to CBS.
It's interesting. Yes, it's very interesting.
You know, so to summarize, they won't pay for us to send out prizes, but they are paying to refurbish 2 jets to have CBS stars and executives taken to the Super Bowl.
Good.
There's a recklessness around.
Robert Frosky, Broadcast News.
Go figure.
This is a brutal layoff.
Okay, time out. You know, we've not even talked about the People's Choice Awards. I haven't told you about the weekends. Mm-hmm. Listen, let's do a break. We'll be right back.
This is the Don and Mike Show.
Hello, can you hear me?
Dennis Murphy, you have shown me something. Dennis Murphy, 2001. You got to show me something more.
Hey, how you doing?
Don and Mike, live at the Super Bowl this Friday. They will show you something.
Yep.
What the hell kind of country is this where I can only hate a man if he's white?
Women love their penises.
Yeah.
Don and Mike.
Stand in line, girls. All right, here's the closest I can find to showing you a picture of when Bush's daughter's teeth came out. That's when she's pulled it back up, and he's got his hand. Almost looks like he's copping a feel.
And she's an attractive woman.
Told you, she's hot.
She truly is.
She's like the Britney Spears of the Bush family.
Yeah, very good. A nice little adding some attractiveness to the White House. But I see what she's doing right there. She's like covering up like, whoa.
Yeah.
And he's grinning.
Does it say, is that Jenna or Barbara? Do we know which daughter that is?
That's probably the...
It says Jenna Jameson.
That's the nicest boob he's seen in 50 years. Because you got to know his wife got dried up raisins.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not like his mama's got anything. His moma.
Hey, now there's where I beg to differ, yeah. His mamo.
His mamo. M-A-M-O.
Don't you talk about my mamo.
His mamo.
Boy, my mamo was so proud.
Okay, geez, you know, I want to tell you about the weekend. I got to do the Golden Globes first. Besides Elizabeth Taylor, and we'll discuss her ad nauseum in just a second.
Phoebecia.
First... You know, that George Clooney movie, I told you that that movie is one of the 10 best movies I've ever seen in my life.
Hollywood agree. Press agrees with you.
Nobody knows dick about it. Did you go see it, Buzz?
I did. And as soon as it was over, I turned to Marcia and said, I want to stay and see it again.
Really?
This is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Oh, brother, where art thou? And George Clooney won the Golden Globe last night for the best actor in a comedy. He beat out Robert De Niro and Jim Carrey.
I assume this movie will be easier to see now that it's picked up a Golden Globe. They'll probably do that second wave push where they'll put it in a few more theaters.
Here's the problem with the Golden Globes, though. The Golden Globes, when they first come on the air last night at 8 o'clock, man, it's rapid fire. It's, here's the first award, here's the second award, here's the third award. Like, the first 40 minutes, they fly by.
It sings.
Then they get to the part where they're doing the soundtracks, and then it starts to slow down. And by the time Al Pacino gets up there for his...
And what the hell was he talking about?
Stream of consciousness, you know, forget about it, whatever the hell he was talking about.
About three-quarters of the way through that speech, if you want to call it a speech, they had a crowd reaction shot, and I have never seen people that were trying to like a guy more. Because, you know, Hollywood loves to love its own, and they were showing the people's faces, and everybody's face had the same thing, like going, oh, what the F is he talking about?
Hey, Tom Hanks. Nice retarded mustache.
I mean,
that looked like an Italian lady's mustache that he had.
It was like this little peach fuzz, and you know, he's gained that weight back that he lost in Castaway.
I got a better mustache than Tom Hanks. Now listen, I'm going to tell you first, the best breast last night, Heather Locklear.
Yeah?
Everybody's saying there wasn't a lot of skin. Heather Locklear has fantastic breasts.
Right.
And they were nearly popping out of her dress last night.
I was telling you that I thought that the dresses that were worn last night, there was not the cleavage or the exposed breast that you have seen in previous Golden Globe shows.
Right.
That's the show where they kind of go crazy with it, and you didn't see a lot of that. The lady from The Sopranos,
Carm Soprano.
Carm Soprano had this little tuxedo jacket thing happening with nothing underneath.
Yeah, who knew she had a nice breast? Although, you know
what? She had nice breasts.
I think I've said before that I would do Carm Soprano.
Well, she looks pretty darn good. She looked as good as she can look. I've seen her on Oz, too. And that's when she looks like a man.
Now, listen, I am going to tell you, a girl who I still would do, but that redhead from Sex and the City last night looked horrible. She looked like dog crap last night.
Yeah, because I was going to say that, you know, she, when they opened up the show, they had a little clip of her doing this kind of spazzo dance.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen Sarah Jessica Parker look a lot better than she looked last night.
Kim Cattrall looked like she had just been effed by a football team.
And then spent 3 hours under a sun lamp.
No, I thought it was sun in. I thought it was...
Yeah, something was happening to her face.
That copper tone stuff that you just smooth on to make it look like you have an instant tan.
Yeah, she had made a mistake because she was getting redder as the show went on.
Lots of makeup on Dave Foley last night.
All right, listen, I'll take that, Rob.
Stand by it today, especially.
Cynthia Nixon did not look good last night. However, the person I hated the most last night at that awards show was goddamn Dick Clark. And I'm talking about
Dick Clark so long.
Even before the thing with Elizabeth Taylor.
Uh-huh.
This is what I hate about Dick Clark. When they go to the first commercial break, and he's standing backstage with George Clooney, and he goes, first off, like we're really getting some kind of unscripted, off-the-cuff, behind-the-scenes, you know, they know they're on TV.
We're going to take you right into the green room.
So he goes, hi, everybody, Dick Clark here with George Clooney. So, George, what do you have to say? And George Clooney says something that's mildly funny. And this is Dick Clark's standard move, where he puts his hand over his face as if to say, oh, my God, I can't believe you just said that. Well, that's live TV. We'll see George out there in just a moment.
That's the original jive ass.
Yes, and it is the exact same reaction he had.
Is that also all that money for that Golden Globe show is going into his pocket?
Yeah,
right.
Dick Clark production. If you remember back to the days of foul-ups, bloops,
and blunders,
and
right.
Blunders and practical jokes.
Right.
When they would come back from playing some prank they'd played on, like, Scott Baio
with Ed.
Yeah. Ed would always go, ho, ho. And Dick Clark would always do that. His hand on his face going, right. Oh, my God, I can't believe we did that.
It's a standard move.
You know, when he's trying to get the feeling across the audience that, oh, my God, we have done something totally outrageous. Really, he's done nothing that was outrageous.
Well, you know, enjoy that one because I do think that is the best award show of all of them, and they are all downhill. I include the Academy Awards in that.
Oh, that show sucks.
Because the Academy Awards is so damn long and has so much crap in it. That you can't enjoy it, but
you know, and Renee Zellweger, I thought she was good in Nurse Betty, and I guess I'm a fan of hers, but the bitch from the other TV show already did the thing when you're in there taking a dump when they call your name.
And at least if you're going to be out in the bathroom and make Hugh Grant, and there's the perfect guy for awkward moments. I mean, it almost looked choreographed. And you come back, you at least have a snappy comment. At least have some kind of ad lib ready. You got that whole trip from the can up to the stage, and instead she said, I almost missed my moment, or whatever.
Right.
And it was just not... She is definitely Airhead Risha.
I did think that it was interesting, though, that she didn't. She mentioned everybody. She even said something about her new boyfriend, which I thought was like a a dig at Jim Carrey.
I think she was saying her manager was the best date to have. He's a great date.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, my date is the best date to have.
Right, exactly.
Kind of a dig. So even at that point, I'm bored with it. The Al Pacino thing was mildly amusing, but the highlight of the show is when, and now listen, I know she's had brain surgery, when they wheel Elizabeth Taylor out there, and she comes out, and this pig cannot figure out how to simply look at the teleprompter and say...
Or read on the envelope, because I think they're on the back of the envelope. The way I looked at it, they're also printed on the back.
Yeah.
The nominees are printed on the back.
You're right. So she's got a fail-safe. If she can't see
right.
the prompter, she can look at the envelope. She cannot noodle through. Now, I don't know if she's high or if she's drunk.
She sure has that. For years and years and years, Elizabeth Taylor's always had that boozy old broad rap going. You know,
or
kind of wobbly.
She's just got that old lady thing. That she, if she's like, you know.
Well, didn't she have brain surgery recently, too?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you got the boozy thing happening, you got the feeble old lady thing happening, and you throw in brain surgery.
Yeah and, you know, a touch of Ron Reagan.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and who knows, you know, God knows what pills she...
How old is she, though, really? I mean, how old is she?
Well, she's like 70.
77, I thought.
70 or something like that?
70 yet. I think she's probably almost 70.
Yeah, I mean, she's like late 60s.
Right.
So she comes out, and she goes, the nominees, Elizabeth, and she's looking off into the corner and looking into the other corner. And now,
so here are the nominees, and she goes right for the first thing she does is she opens up the envelope, and you hear the crowd going, no!
So they send out Dick Clark to save her.
Right, right. Okay. And Dick Clark is like all wimped out.
This is, in essence, if you're drowning and someone on a boat throws you a cement block.
Right.
Okay. Dick Clark is not the guy to send out to save Elizabeth Taylor when she's making this mammoth spectacle of herself.
He didn't take charge immediately. He pointed at the monitor.
Uh-huh.
Well, she doesn't even know what room she's in. And he's pointing at the monitor, and she's like, oh, what is that? Hello? What? And, you know, and normally I would think that they were faking it, but no. She really was legitimately clueless.
Yeah, it was a fantastic moment.
And then when she backed up when she announced Gladiator was the winner, and I thought she was going to go down. I thought she took a little stutter step, and I was like, ooh, caught her heel on the stage.
And the video of this was something you could watch without even hearing it, and you would know that it was funny.
Right.
That she was hilarious. She was in this daze-like funk up there, and then Dick Clark comes to help her, and Dick Clark is...
Right.
Zero help.
Sure, no help whatsoever, because he was a little overwhelmed that it was, you know, Dame Elizabeth Taylor. I didn't know she was a great dame.
Yeah. And he's trying to help her, saying, you know, there's the prompter.
Sure.
There's the prompter. It's like, what?
Yeah, it was definitely not the kind of award show that they bill it as, with all these wonderful moments. The F-ups were the only real spontaneous moments, but you didn't have some of the... You know, the moments like with Nicholson up there, or with Jim Carrey, and, you know...
Did you read where Nicholson was?
Where was he?
He was at the Lakers game.
Of course. Yeah, not nominated.
He was at the Lakers game.
Why does he have to be there?
And the Al Pacino... Now, I wish we had this on tape. Now, I don't know how long... It seemed to go on... How long was it, really? 15 minutes, you think?
This speech, I'm a huge Al Pacino fan. I mean,
we all are.
I mean, watching his movies, I mean, it's right in our age group, too. I mean, we've been there for all his stuff growing up.
Dog Day Afternoon.
Serpico, those great movies of the 70s.
The Godfather.
And he gets up there, and I'm waiting to hear, because I'm interested to see what he's going to have to say. And he goes into a disjointed, rambling, absolutely no direction speech, and... I remember when they gave, I think it was Dustin Hoffman, they gave him that, or he was honored in a similar way, and he gave a speech that was really fantastic, really put together,
Didn't it seem like Al Pacino had put no thought into what he was going to say, and he probably just said, hey, I'll just go up there and wing it, I'm such an icon, I can just go up there, whatever, off the top of my head.
And he does this thing where he's, like, tugging at his ear or something like that. You know, what the hell? You know, and his hair. I mean, let's say, you know, I understand he's got that hair, but, you know, this get-out-of-bed hair that seems to be in vogue now. And he's up there, and I'm waiting. He starts it. Didn't he start out with, he was talking about his teacher?
Hey, if anybody out there has the tape of Al Pacino, I wish we had it today. We don't. Something happened to our copy of the tape. If you've got it. We've got to replay it at least the first 5 minutes, because from the moment he started,
right,
He was disjointed.
Right. He was totally disjointed. He mentioned his teacher. Oh, okay, we're going to talk about an educator theme here. And then he goes off in 15 different directions, and he's mentioning names, and he's just not making a point. And I love the cutaways. Cutaways at the Golden Globes are terrific because they let cameras all over that place, and you get the real people going, what the F is going on here?
Why was that one old broad on, Faye Dunaway, why was she on camera so much last night?
Because people like her, because she is Mommy Dearest. And I always think Faye Dunaway should be on camera. I don't know. Faye Dunaway, they just, the camera likes to be on her.
They was on her all the time. And
Dick Clark, maybe he's banging her.
Yeah. Sometimes they would go to just a quick shot of a celebrity in the crowd, and they didn't get anybody yawning. But what I love is, like, I think at one point when Al Pacino was just rambling on, they went to Julia Roberts' boyfriend, who appeared to be
He looks like he's dead anyway.
He's studying his fork, you know, and he's looking at it, and he, like anybody else at one of these things, like, what the F is this guy talking about?
You know, when she got her award, and she said something nice about him, and he, like, looked down. He looked PO'd. He looked like he wasn't happy. I mean, enjoy the gravy train. Maybe he's one of these actors that thinks, you know, hey, I'm going to attain her level of stardom or something. You know, I don't like being the kept man. But, you know, when you're with somebody like Julia Roberts, face it. If you're not a megastar yourself, you're the kept man. That's just the way it's going to appear.
That's okay.
And pretend to be happy, at least. But she said something like, it's nice to have somebody to say, how was your day? And Benjamin, thank you so much. And they cut to him, and he does that kind of surly, sullen actor crap. Which is just BS.
Sexy for the car.
Sexy
for the car.
You know, he's just looking down going, yeah, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, and listen, I know all you guys like Julia Roberts. I'm telling you.
I love Julia Roberts. Julia Roberts probably looked the best of anybody last
night. That girl's got a horse face.
I love her.
I've said it for a long time.
She is dead sexy.
Big horse mouth, big gigantic lips, big ugly schnoz.
She's no Cynthia Nixon, I'll tell you that right now.
Okay. Listen, Cynthia Nixon did not have a good night last night.
If you had a choice between Cynthia Nixon and Julia Roberts,
would you do?
Yeah.
Seriously?
You're out of your mind. I know what you're going to say now. You're crazy.
I would. Yeah.
You're crazy. Yeah.
I would do Cynthia Nixon.
I mean, Julia Roberts is, I think she's just one of the hottest women in film.
Oh, that mouth. Put a hook in that mouth.
It's a good thing. I like teeth. I like big teeth.
Okay, good. Well, the cheese stands alone.
I really liked, I like her mouth. I don't think, if you don't like her mouth, then you're done on Julia Roberts.
You know who I didn't think looked as bad last night as I thought she would was Ally McSqueal.
Ally McBeal looked pretty good, actually. A lot of cutaway shots of her, especially when, you know, when Robert Downey was up.
Yeah,
I told you this. He looked straight when he got up there the first time. I think he was presenting.
Right.
And then the second time he was up there, I swear to God, he looked effed up. Especially when Dick Clark interviewed him. He was just
He was coming off stage that time?
You know, licking his lips and stuff like that.
You know, I don't get this in Hollywood, that the guy... His life is a mess, and I think, you know, if you like him or you don't, you feel bad for him, and you hope that he gets his life together. But the only reason he got the award is because he's so effed up. That's why he got the award, because everybody wanted to see what it would be like. And it's just, I think it's unfair that Robert Downey Jr. got the award.
Do you think that was the reason that maybe they... I mean,
yes.
I'd like to know when they finished voting, when the foreign press finished voting.
Like, whenever someone's dying,
right,
they give them the award. Whenever there's some dude like Jack Lemmon who has never won anything in his life, they give him the award. Well, you're Robert Downey Jr. Jesus. First off, it's a goof that he's there. You know, that they got to be saying, hey, wait till we give him the award.
I love him being at award shows, though, because he's fun to watch, because it's just, you know, it's so bizarre. It's so bizarre just to see him there, you know, knowing that a couple of weeks from now, he's probably going back to the Big House.
Okay, oh, hold on. A guy's got the tape of Pacino.
Okay.
Well, here we go. Yeah, right, everybody. Incidentally, if you've never taken LSD, and I haven't, so I don't know,
right.
But I'm guessing that this is kind of what it's like if you're on LSD.
Right.
Hello, Mike. Do you have that tape?
Yeah, I got it. He's just shaking his head now from the standing ovation.
Okay, go. Let's hear it. Roll it.
All right.
Yeah, and of course they gave him like a 15-minute standing ovation. Although it was a good montage of clips from his movies.
That is so warm and wonderful of you to do that. Thank you. It is such impressive look out here tonight. It's thank you, Kevin. Thank you for hosting me. I'm supposed to really say a few words here, and I'm going to, but I'm not going to make it too long. But it is such
liar.
A complication for me that you'd think I would have figured out the mic.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, this guy's not going to stop.
Okay.
But what's with the microphone? Why is he fussing with the microphone?
I don't know.
Well, that's the point.
Oh, wait, it stopped. Hold on, it's coming.
I'm thinking when I think of my life and the whole thing and everything being here and all, I think of Cecil B. DeMille. I think of my mother used to take me to the movies because she worked, and at night, I was 4 or 5 years old, she'd take me to see Cecil B. DeMille films. And I sort of was weaned on them. And I'd go home, and then the next day, we had no television, so I'd remember the movie that my mother took me to, and I'd act all the parts out.
Now, even at this point, I'm kind of following where he's going.
Starting out when he was a little boy.
He loved the movies.
A few years later, I went on, and I want to mention a few people because they are very important to me. And
here we go off track now.
You know, even Harry's going to say the teachers.
I think it's appropriate. So, Kevin, would you mind holding this a second?
Then he gives Kevin his Golden Globe Award. He wants to talk with his hands. And I'm thinking at this point, hey, maybe he'll start making sense.
I had Blanche, I was 12 years old, and this wonderful teacher, Blanche Rothstein, my drama teacher in school, handed me a Bible and asked me to read the Psalms and read them to the auditorium, to learn them and read them every week to assembly. And some of you might have been there, I don't know. So I would read the Psalms.
This is where he's gone.
I think
he's gone now.
Early on, I had a taste of the Word, that Word. The power of the word, I had that feeling.
What word? You're talking about Jesus? You're talking about the written word.
It overwhelmed me. And I thought at that point that I would like to do that. And so a few years later, I was in Greenwich Village in New York trying to be an actor. And that wonderful teacher, Blanche Rothstein, was no more than that. She went that extra step. She just, I remember her. I get a vision of her in my South Bronx apartment in the kitchen with my grandmother.
What?
She's just sitting there talking to my grandmother.
The village,
I don't know what she's
South
saying,
Bronx.
I think it's one of the reasons I'm here.
He's now spoken for 3 minutes. 3 minutes.
She took that extra, she went that extra step. As teachers are wont to do from time to time, and it's very important. They really make lives happen. I love teachers. Let me do that for you.
Okay, he loves teachers.
That's it.
After that, I moved to the village. I was a teenager, so I met another great teacher, my dear friend Charlie Lock, and there was Charlie. Not only did he,
it's not like Charles Lock, Mr. Christian, Hunchback of Notre Dame.
I don't know.
Can you guess who he's talking about, Rob? Too old, yeah.
Interesting read on things and everything that is here. It's very special. Not only did he give me that, but he brought me into his family, I think. And at that time in my life, it's essential for my survival.
Now he's totally off the page.
4 minutes now.
You people, about certain seminal moments in my life here. But, long this time, I think. It's true. These people are why I'm here. I can go on and talk more. I won't talk too much more.
Liar!
There's wonderful actors and actresses I work with, and great directors and writers. And members of crews that I work with that are in my mind and my heart right now. And their names, I had too many names, I can't just start naming them. Some special people. There's Marty Bregman, a great producer, produced 5 movies I made. And he gave me a film career. I had no film career without Marty Bregman. We got Francis Ford Coppola.
He's there, Francis Ford Coppola. That's like something that the audience recognizes and they start applauding.
Yeah, right. We got Lee Strasberg, my dear beloved friend and colleague.
Five minutes, Mark.
It's interesting. Anything that happened in the world, Lee had something to say about it. And when he talked about it, it was just different than you'd ever imagine. And it was always accurate. I loved him, and he was a constant source of inspiration for me. And I don't want to leave out my great agent, one of the greatest agents of all time, is Rick Nocita. He's kept me in film since these last 10 years, Rick. He's just kept me in movies. That's close to a miracle.
They should take this tape.
And I think he just says, he's kept me in movies, and that's close to a miracle.
He's Al Pacino.
End of this.
They should take this tape, and they should send this to speech classes around America.
Yeah. It's terrific on how not to do it.
Yes.
Amen.
Feelings, because they're not facts. So, but I feel lucky. I think in this room, a lot of us feel lucky when we think about it, because we do what we want to do, right? We're, you know, and when you think of this great big world, you know, this distracted globe where all these things are going on, and here we are, able to do what we want to do. I mean, it's a privilege, you know, and it's interesting when you think about it.
And there he thinks about it for a minute.
Okay.
Okay.
Just doing an acting thing. I'm an actor, you know, I'm going to do it.
Nervous laughter.
As long as I don't try to, do a Robin Williams thing. I have a tendency when I just get started, but I have the head, but I don't have the talent. So,
bingo.
I'm ready to say something about doing. I don't always want to act. And I know a lot of you don't always want to act. I mean, I really don't. I got a reputation as an actor.
What?
Acting, loves acting. I don't always want to act, believe me. I'd rather not act a lot of the time. But, I don't know. I do it. I just keep doing it. I'm still doing it. We're going to do it later, right? So I do it. Soon Kevin will join in and we'll have this duet. I hope. I'm sorry, I'm going on too long. But
okay.
Interesting thing. Someone I know was talking to a great writer on the phone. I'm going to wrap it up.
Okay,
great writer.
Now we're going off somewhere else.
You're so prolific. You write all these wonderful things. It's so beautiful. How do you keep doing it? And the writer just took a pause and said,
you're waiting for it now.
Well, be thinking. So, I saw the Hollywood Foreign Press.
I'm waiting for this great point. It beats thinking.
There is no great point.
Hollywood Foreign Press is such an interesting group of people. I see you occasionally on things. You are. You know they are. They really are.
8 minutes.
I have press conferences on this fantastic. And you out there, congratulations to you out there. And, we're doing what we want to
everybody
do.
So out
we're
there.
Winners all, right? And,
hey, everybody listening out there.
You done? Speech written by Tom Gavin.
Aaron Brockovich kicked his ass.
There you go. I mean, really, Aaron Brockovich was one of the better speeches up there.
Thank you, Mike.
Hey, no problem.
Nice, we appreciate it. Okay.
I mean, honest to God, I was just saying, everybody was waiting for that dramatic moment, and it didn't. Even at the end when he said, somebody once asked a writer,
right.
It beats thinking. And it's like,
hello, Don and Mike show.
Don, Mike.
Yeah.
The really sad thing about that speech is that he knew he was getting it before, and he had like 2 weeks to write a speech.
Yeah.
Or at least an outline or a note, or you're an actor. Memorize something.
He probably figured, hey, F it, I'm De Niro. I can go up there, and I'm Pacino. I can go up there and say whatever I want.
Yeah. Say thanks.
Hey, I know Dick Tracy was a popular movie, but why did he use Dick Tracy so many times in his... He's made so many great movies that they didn't include in those film clips, but they include that goofy one where Dick Tracy.
Where he was Mumbles or whatever. Right.
What the hell are they doing?
Hello, Don and Mike.
Hey, Don and Mike.
Hey.
You know, if you played that side-by-side with the Elvis speech with the narco spot, you couldn't tell the difference.
Thank you very much.
Cadence, it's the same voice.
It will fascinate
you.
I got sick in the hospital.
All right, thank you, my friend.
Makes Robert Downey Jr. look straight.
Hello, Don and Mike show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Mike, I just wanted to say between him and Liz, it was like a train wreck. I was so embarrassed I had to leave the room. I was embarrassed for them.
Yes, but at least Elizabeth Taylor's had brain surgery. At least, you know, there's an excuse there.
Sure.
Right.
But
this guy, improv is definitely not his forte.
You would think that this guy is improv, but maybe not. You know, these actors, a lot of times, they're great if you write the lines for them, but they're not if they have to improvise.
And maybe he's one of these guys where they have to just, like, feed him his script line by line.
Ooh. You never know.
And then add it all together, like if he's got a big speech to make, like in Donnie Brasco.
But you see, he's done Shakespeare and stuff like that. I mean, this is a guy that memorizes stuff. He can do it. Maybe he can't give a speech. Do you know how many times probably when he's out to dinner with people, too, and people are kissing his ass, where he's probably rambling on like this, and everybody's looking at him going, yeah, right, exactly,
well,
right.
But no one's got the balls to say, hey,
sure.
Hey, Al, shut the F up.
It's like, what are you talking, you know? But people never say that to Al Pacino, like,
ooh.
What the F are you talking about? Excuse me, Mr. Pacino, it's been fascinating listening to you ramble for 8 minutes. Is there a point somewhere?
Don't you think some of his Hollywood friends, like, wouldn't you think, like, maybe De Niro would just say, well, wait, hey, Al, well, what the F?
De Niro probably not even listening.
Right.
You know, he's doing his own thing. What are you talking to me?
There's one possibility. This is the only award show where they provide dinner and drinks beforehand. He might just be fake.
He did not look to me that he was that effed up, though.
He might not look it, but he could be out of his mind.
But yeah. Rob, if he's like you and me, you become more eloquent after that.
Hello, Don and Mike show.
At least to each other. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. His mind is empty. That's why he's such a great actor. They give him a script and his head's just full of it. It was so nonsensical.
Well, but it was great. I just want to say it was a real highlight of the show.
It certainly was. But, you know, one of the most bored people that they showed in the audience was him during all of the bits from his film. Did you notice he had his head in the palm of his hand down on the table like he didn't even want to watch himself?
Well, I think
it was probably like a little embarrassed.
I read that as embarrassment also. Right. It was like, oh, all of this fuss for me.
He was probably embarrassed.
Nasty
wench.
The reason for my call about Robert Downey Jr., when they were announcing all the nominees and they did the close-up on his face, he did a big, like a pig snort with his nose. I don't know if you noticed. I immediately thought, cocaine. He went to the bathroom. There you go. And like you said, the second time he was up on the stage, he was a whole different person.
I thought he looked a little cooked.
Oh, but you know, but wouldn't you have someone watching him in the bathroom?
You'd think.
I mean, you don't let Robert Downey Jr. go to the bathroom by himself.
Like you don't let him go, to Palm Springs for Thanksgiving, but they did then, you know. I think this is a guy that's probably very skilled. He just looks so different from the first time when he presented till that last moment when Dick Clark was, you know, interviewing him and he's licking his teeth and he was just, he looked to me like he was completely coked up.
Hello, Don and Mike show.
Hey, this is Margaret from Gainesville. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Margaret. We're doing great, thank you.
Good. I just wanted to mention another script that you guys forgot to add, or maybe you didn't notice. One of the actors was presenting someone to come out and present an award or something, and they were saying from their new movie, it was supposed to be Vanilla Dreams, and they said Vanilla Ice.
Oh, all right, thank you. It pales in comparison, though, to Elizabeth Taylor and Al Pacino.
Yeah, that's Tom Cruise that they were introducing for Vanilla Ice.
Hey, and I said to Mike, when Tom Cruise came out, and he had like...
So it's not going to be Tom Cruise. When I heard that, I thought, it's not going to be Tom Cruise playing like Vanilla Ice?
Oh, you thought they were really making a movie about Vanilla Ice?
They said starring in the upcoming movie Vanilla Ice, and I'm like, hey, Tom Cruise is going to be that.
Ice, ice, baby.
Tom Cruise is going to play Robbie Van Winkle.
What was Tom Cruise doing when he came? Tom Cruise came out and he had like the best supporting actress. And he said, and the winner is Dolores Spiewak. Chocolat. And then I thought, well, did he just F up and give the winner? And then he read the nominees, and whoever she was talking about, he was talking about was not even one of the nominees. Was that some kind of an inside joke?
It's a pretty weird award show.
Yeah.
And who is that Boink, or whatever her name is? Bjork.
What is her deal? I thought she was an ABBA. I mean, didn't ABBA have names like B-J-O-R-K?
Right, yeah. Is this woman a great actress?
Yeah. She's a singer.
She's a singer?
She's like in a lute or an Eskimo or something.
But hasn't she been in movies, too?
I think so, but primarily she's just a singer. This might be her first movie.
And also, just one other thing, I just have to say, Martin Sheen, just shut up. You know, I mean, you're great on the West Wing, but listen, who gives
that's President Bartlett to you.
Listen, who gives a crap about Jesse Jackson banging that girl? You know, you waste my time up there with the, hey, thank you for this award, and Jesse, we need you. We're behind you.
Martin Sheen. Marty Sheen.
Please.
Way to go, Marty.
Please. Oh, come on. You know that was crap.
I like Martin
Sheen. He brings up Jesse Jackson.
I like Martin Sheen. Always have.
Yeah.
I like it. Show him support. Hey, but I understand why that angered you. It angered you and all the other Nixon Republicans.
No, F you. F you. We will be right back.
This is the Don and Mike Show.
You got a gift, my friend. You got a gift. Oh, yeah. You saw that there was something that I was trying to do, and you figured that out. That's why you are who you are. God bless you. You got a f***ing gift.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
I really don't.
Yes, you do.
World champion Lucy Juicers, Don and Mike.
Hey, we're going to have to come up with another perverted contest this week. Yay! Because the wonderful Tammy Sachs has just told me that we got $1,000 to give away one day this week.
How about genitals for cash?
Courtesy of The Cell, rated R, starring JoLo.
That was a joke, honey.
Jennifer Lopez and Vince Vaughn. Now available to rent. So we'll give away $1,000. We'll probably do it on Thursday.
Ah, right before we go to the Super Bowl. Thursday.
Hello, Don and Mike Show. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to call and tell you that I got my prize a couple of weeks ago, but you're on vacation, and I just wanted to thank you and Don and everybody else at WJFK.
Oh, you're very welcome, and be glad, because that was probably one of the last prizes that the company is actually going to pay for to send out.
Yeah, we'll be sending prizes out by ox cart now.
Well, you know, it was one little check in a big, huge padded envelope.
Terrific.
Oh, what did you, what'd you win, money?
Yes, I did. I won $1,000.
I hope you ran to the bank as fast as possible and deposited that check.
Cast and gone.
Can I ask you a question about that envelope?
Mm-hmm.
Did you damage it when you were opening it?
Just pull apart.
Really? Is it reparable? Why don't you send that back to us?
It's in the trash, long gone.
A missed opportunity.
All right. I also had a question about the Golden Globes, or actually a comment.
Yeah.
Did anybody last night see when Nicole Kidman came off the stage with George Clooney, how she was fixing to eat him up?
You mean when you say eat him up, like she was horny for him?
Oh, she was bad. Eat him up.
Yeah, but you know, I think she's got that vibe going with just about every guy.
I think she is dead sexy.
I've got to think that Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman are the Buzz and Marcia of that whole set. I don't doubt that.
Do you mean that they seek out other Hollywood celebrities and invite them to their bedchamber?
Yes.
Really?
They swap, sure.
Interesting.
Well, look at that movie he made with her. The one where they wore the
Eyes Wide Shut. Yeah. One of my favorite movies.
The queer masks and stuff.
Boom. Boom.
That was one boring-ass movie, although I did like when everybody walked around naked with the masks on.
My favorite scene in that movie is when she is describing to him the fantasy that she had about the military officer, and she is just sitting there, and man, she's got it going on. I don't think he can act his way out of a paper bag, but she is a great actress.
She's hot. She could use some bigger jugs.
Yes, she could. Yeah, but even that, when you look at her from behind, she has a wonderful rear end, as Steve Kometko might say. I saw him after the E. I watched a lot of E.
That big fag, I watched him too.
Why don't they I really like to see Joan and Melissa Rivers host the Golden Globe.
You know, how come no one ever comes out to say, what an absolute science project gone bad Joan Rivers is,
right?
And how her daughter,
right,
you know, through the luck of some genetics and maybe some plastic surgery, is not as ugly as her mom,
right?
But her daughter is one big friggin' dog, too.
Are you going to watch Melissa's Guide to Pregnancy?
For the two of them, for the two of them to be on the red carpet,
right,
critiquing the way other people look.
Sure.
I mean, if you're going to have somebody critique beautiful people,
mm-hmm,
have that person be remotely beautiful.
Well, they don't critique when they're there. They critique after the fact.
But they do behind their back. Though.
Yeah, they sit there after the fact. They say everybody looks wonderful. And Joan Rivers is the best, where she'll be interviewing the male celebrity, and she'll look at the date, if the date's a nobody, and just say, "That's a lovely dress. Thank you." Go away. Go away, please.
Oh, here we go. Melissa! Missy, where are you? I'm over here. Mom.
I'm here, Mom.
I have to go back to my mom.
Mom.
My mom.
And meanwhile, I'm Steve Kometko out here on the red carpet. And we've got lots of beautiful celebrities coming in today. You know, I'm gay, and I don't care who knows it, frankly. My name is Steve Kometko, and let's go see what's happening on the red carpet right now with that big cow, Joan Rivers. Hi, Joanie.
Oh, thank you, Steve. You're so gay. Okay, we're going to talk right now. Who do we have over here? We've got, Missy, send her up to me right now. It's Lisa Liu. Oh, fantastic.
Hello. Hello, Joanie. It's so nice to see you, Joan.
So nice to see you. You know, you're so voluptuous for a Chinese girl.
Oh, thank you.
What are you wearing?
I am wearing Giorgio Armani.
It's beautiful. It's fantastic.
Where is the fag?
Steve Kometko is up on the aisle. Let's kick it back to Melissa Rivers. She has Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson. Oh!
Ma? I'm here now with Tom Hanks. Hi, Tom.
Wilson!
I'm Steve Kometko. Don't forget about me. I'm wearing the tuxedo without the bow tie. Notice, but I always have the red ribbon on.
Watch me. I watch more of that network than I've watched in the last 5 years.
This is Steve Kometko.
And I'm Steve's bitchy sidekick that doesn't like him.
But she is one grade-A piece of ass. Of course, I wouldn't know about that. Oh, my God, be still my beating heart. Here comes the cast of Will and Grace. This is Steve Kometko.
And I'm Joan Rivers.
And I'm Missy Rivers.
God. Like they, you know, really, when are they going to change that to an L? When are they going to change that network to an L? The L channel.
What, for lame?
For loser.
Lame loser.
Oh, here we are. Fantastic.
And, you know, it was 6 weeks ago, I guess, that Melissa Rivers had her baby. And that's what they were talking about.
Here she is. Look at that body. Look at that body of my daughter.
Oh, Ma.
Ma.
Oh, Ma.
I'm going to go back to my mom. Let's kick it back to my mom.
What everybody doesn't know, hi, viewers, this is Steve Kometko. What everybody doesn't know is that that was the world's first anal birth. Back to you, Grandma Rivers.
Thank you very much, Steve. That's right, a successful anal birth. And we have to take a break right now. And when we come back, we get more stars! And I'm going to unhinge my jaw and eat a ferret.
Do you know why Joan Rivers was so excited about the grandchild? Why
is that?
Spare parts for her next plastic surgery.
That's right.
They're breeding them now.
That's right. They'll be grafting some of the babies thigh under my eyebrows. I'll be left to live longer. Have this incredible skin, this translucent wax dummy skin.
This is Steve Kometko.
Hello, Steve.
I am sporting Major Wood right now. I have just seen Tom Cruise walk by. I want to tell you, he's dreamy. He is so dreamy. Oh, my God.
I'm sending Rob Lowe from the West Wing over to see you, Steve.
Oh, my God. Double wood. It's double wood here on the E Channel.
Don't geese, Steve Kometko.
I only wish that I was back in my set where I have the giant fish tank behind me.
Oh, hold on, Steve. We have to take a commercial break. My safety pin that's holding my skin up, it just came undone. I don't want to look like a Shar-Pei dog. Help me very much. I'm melting.
I don't want to mention anything on camera right now. If you could pan up on Joan, this is Steve Kometko, but I believe her uterus has just fallen out again.
Oh, no. Oh, they said that they were going to put an extra stitch in there. It was going to be A-okay.
And look, her uterus is all over the place.
It's all right.
There's Anne Heyshan, Lucy Liu. Hey, girls. Look at Joan's uterus on the ground.
Enjoy it while you can. I'm going to get a couple of rubber bands and some foundation makeup. I'm going to be okay. Everything's going to be fantastic right now. I'm really not me. I'm made out of 100% plastic.
Hi, everybody. This is Steve Kometko. I am so sad that Will and Grace got totally shut out tonight.
I'm not.
But I don't know what that is. No more deserving show.
Hey, Steve, I'll cheer you up. Here's one of my Golden Hanger Awards. You know what to do with it. Have fun, Steve.
Oh, do I.
Yes, enjoy.
Oh, do I.
Enjoy your Golden Hanger. We'll see an x-ray of that in the emergency room later.
What are we going to be doing? The true Hollywood story of Joan and Melissa Rivers.
It's never going to happen if I can prevent it from being on the air. And then I bark like a dog.
Joan, this is Steve Kometko.
Steve.
I am being chased right now by super-sized model Emmy.
Oh, fantastic.
Who I believe wants to eat me, and not in a sexual way.
Oh, Steve, I've just gotten caught in camera manhunt's cheeks. I'm in her cheeks. Oh, look at all this extra skin that I can use.
I wish I could help you, but there is David Hyde Pierce from Frasier Niles. It's me, Steve Kometko from the E! Channel.
Oh, he's so horny. He's so horny.
I would do the grandpa on that show.
I need artificial eyes. I need artificial eyes. I want the blue. Beautiful baby blue. Look at Melissa's body. She gave birth 6 weeks ago. Oh!
Was that anal birth?
Oh!
It was an anal birth. Hi, everyone. I'm Steve Kometko on the red carpet.
And this is Joan Rivers, and I'm falling apart, completely falling apart.
This was a white carpet before Joan's uterus fell out. Now it's a red and brown carpet.
I am made 100% out of latex, total latex skin. I'm a skeleton. I'm 95 years old. People don't realize it. What are you wearing?
Oh! Hi, everybody. This is Steve Kometko. I'm so excited I'm here with Hal Sparks from Talk Soup. He's dreamy.
Oh, he's absolutely gorgeous.
And there, of course, is the delightful, delectable, eat him up with a spoon, Greg Kinnear. You know, he got his start on E! With Talk Soup.
Oh, look at this. Here comes Calista Flockhart. Hello, Calista Flockhart. How do you become so skinny? Oh, you put your finger down your throat and vomit. Fantastic.
Oh, that's gross.
Congratulations. I'm sorry, Steve Kometko.
That is so gross.
I'm terribly sorry. You're not interested in me anyway, though. But I kind of look like a man. I've got all this folds of skin from all the procedures I've had. It actually resembles a penis. Oh! Oh!
Oh, God.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay.
The Golden Globes.
Jesus Christ. And he makes it an all-day show.
Yes, they do, yeah. I watch it before and afterwards.
It's like 6 hours. It's as bad as the goddamn Super Bowl.
Right, for that it is.
I saw the commercial yesterday. And do you realize the time they pushed back the kickoff of the Super Bowl this year?
It's not 6 o'clock?
6:45.
Jesus. I mean, like, they don't have enough?
Kickoff at 6:45. They start the pregame show at noon.
Right. Silly.
They have 6 hours and 45 minutes of goddamn build-up to a football game.
And, of course, then we'll have fabulous commercials to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's a separate story, feature story. The great ads. Country idiots we are.
Hey, this is a good commercial. That was a great commercial for chips.
I don't forget USA Today, the day after.
Right.
The Ad-O-Meter.
Right.
You know, what spots did America like best? America liked the Dancing Bear. We did not like the Dancing Dorito, though.
That, to me, is the same thing with the local newscast where they, at Thanksgiving, they put the guy out at the airport.
Right.
The same moronic crap.
They got to do it. Hello, Don and Mike. They're like us. They got time to fill.
That's what they do.
Hello.
Hi there, buddies. How are you?
Hi, we're doing great, thank you.
This is Sally out in Ashburn, and I got to tell you, I was watching those Golden Globes last night, and I was disgusted by Lucy Liu and Anne Heche. I mean, is Anne Heche gay, or is she straight, or is she gay again?
No. I read in a newspaper today that Anne Heche gave Lucy Liu her phone number.
Hey, they were hanging all over each other during those cutout scenes.
Hmm.
It was pretty weird to watch.
Yeah, I think Anne Heche swings both ways.
Yeah, but I like the idea of Lucy Liu and Anne Heche getting together. They looked good, too. They looked real good together.
The story was that they were at some, it's in one of these papers, that they were at a bar at a post-show, and Heche said, hey, you know, come to my house. I'll give you my phone number. And then she wrote it down and handed it to her and then made Lucy Liu repeat the phone number back so that Anne Heche was sure she had the phone number.
That's cool. They did look good together, too. And they were there with that other person from Ally McBeal, The kind of short blonde girl that's on. Who's the other blonde?
Oh, is that the girl who's on with Regis sometime? What's her
name?
Yeah.
Oh, the one with the big rack. Jane Krakowski.
Yeah.
Krakowski.
I'd do her in a heartbeat.
And Lucy Liu right. was looking at Melissa Rivers really like she was a cockroach under somebody's shoe.
Well, sure.
Yeah, she didn't want to be there.
Melissa Rivers is the lowest of the low.
Well, you can see, actually, the certain celebrities that look at the Rivers, Melissa and Joan, and some of them are polite. Some of them, like James Woods, kiss their ass, for what reason, I don't know. And then some of them just, tolerate it. They barely tolerate being interviewed by those two. It's fun to watch. Hello, Don and Mike show.
Hey, guys. I'm the guy that challenged Rob to that Dennis Miller thing, and I got my report here.
Oh, hold on. I got to tell you something. Well, this gets into my weekend, but I want to tell you about a fantastic drinking game that, of course...
You played a drinking game?
No. I was just told about it by, the British couple down the street?
Right.
The party couple?
Uh-huh.
Okay. you make, like, kamikaze shooters.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever Dennis Miller runs his fingers through his hair...
Right.
You have to do a shot.
Okay. Everybody in the room?
Everybody in the room.
It's good. What you should do is you should assign some people fingers through the hair, certain people the F word.
No. They said there's one drink for fingers through the hair.
Right.
There's another drink for taking a swig of his water. There's another drink for... unscrewing the water, not drinking, and screwing it back down.
So that's your British friends game that pretty much guarantees you'll be effed up in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. But you're drunk no matter what Dennis Miller does.
If you go all the way to the big screen segment of the show, you'll have alcohol poisoning.
Right. Okay, what about Dennis Miller?
Yeah, I'm the guy that challenged Rob to that thing, and I got my report here.
All right, go ahead.
It's take probably a minute or two. First one was the S word, referring to what a full of S word we live in during the monologue. Then the F word, referring to the president of Portugal, Jorge Sampaio, being elected for a 5-year term during the monologue.
Just let me bring everybody up to speed. We were discussing Dennis Miller's first HBO show, the first show after Monday Night Football. We're saying he's got to be so loaded up with profanities,
right,
that he was going to let fly. Rob contends, how many times did he cuss?
I think it was 14 Fs. I don't remember. I think it was 14.
And this guy, for whatever reason, disagreed with Rob and came up with a different total.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then was the A-hole during the monologue.
Rob, did you even keep track of the profanity in the last one?
As you recall, I didn't accept the challenge because the only reason we were interested in it was the first show back.
So, see, this wouldn't be a legitimate challenge, sir, because Rob didn't even bother doing it.
I know, but you all said go ahead.
I know.
Do it anyway, so I did.
What was your final count?
Do you want me to continue?
No. Just tell us, on his show this week, how many times did Dennis Miller cuss?
16 cuss words in one J-O, and 7 Fs. 3 asses, 2 asses, 1 asshole, 1 jacking off, 1 damn, and 1 bitch.
All right, thank you. Nice work.
Thank you.
An excellent presentation.
Oh, come on, Rob.
Come on.
Hello, Don and Mike show.
This is territory.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm just calling about, you guys were talking about Jane Krakowski, who's on Ally McBeal.
I would crack her Kowski.
Well, I tell you, she, just to give you a hint.
She's got some major league yabos.
She always said her daddy.
I don't know why that makes me laugh.
This little girl had knocker.
You check out the jugs on that girl? Gigantic.
I know you'd crack her Kowski.
She was the original Cousin Vicky on the Vacation show. She was with the Quaid guy.
Yeah, Randy Quaid's daughter says, my dad French kisses better.
Right.
Is that her?
Yeah, that's exactly who that is.
Yeah.
That is her.
That's very right. Good.
Good. Thank you, my friend.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Kowski?
I would crack her Kowski wide open. I would crack her Kowski until she bleeds.
Oh, God. Oh, dear.
I would crack her Kowski until her uterus.
Oh, my God.
Just like Joan Rivers.
I'm going steady, and I French kiss. Everybody says that. Yeah, but Daddy says I'm the best at it.
That's my girl, huh?
Yeah, for those of you that don't like that, Tufsky-esky.
We will be right back.
This is the Don and Mike Show.
This is Stacy. I like to say to all the sales guys and our sales staff, you're a bunch of faggots. You're faggots, a bunch of pussies.
Anyone in particular?
Must I name names? Yeah. You know who you are. You know who you are.
Name the old guys by name because we don't know their names.
I'm gonna call you out. Alan, you're a pussy. Steve, pussy.
There you go.
Goldstein, Johnson, pussy.
Isn't there a Pat?
Ivan, pussy. Pat.
an old pussy. John, forget about it. You suck. Faggots, your pussy. All of you.
Paul Gorgie.
He's a handsome, stunning faggot.
Providing the soundtrack to your thunderous orgasm.
Right.
The Don and Mike Show.
We're trying. Now, we got to get to this Homo Jose, but it's just a couple of things from the weekend I got to tell you about. First, there was a party on my street on Saturday night with the British couple.
They're the party animals, aren't they?
They love to party. It was not an out-of-control party. I didn't get bombed. Nobody got bombed. It was one of those things where there was wine and popcorn, and it was suggested that...
I used to live on that.
Wine and popcorn?
Yeah, in my lean days.
It was suggested that I pick a movie, and they just got a brand-new flat-screen TV, that I bring a movie up, and we could all watch the movie.
Was it an Andrew Blake film?
No, it wasn't. My choice was Casino.
Good. Good choice.
Okay, exactly.
A little long.
Yeah, but, you know, it was one of these deals where we had nothing to do. It was snowing like crazy Saturday night. No one had anywhere to go.
That's an entertaining movie if you haven't seen it.
So, and nobody had seen it except for Frieda and me.
I'd go, even if I, you know, I'd go to see it again.
So, the problem was that as the movie is starting, I'm giving background because, you know, some people are talking and some people are watching and they're talking and I'm explaining that, you know, Robert De Niro has been hired to run the Tangiers Casino and that they're changing his job all the time to stay ahead of the authorities.
Rothstein.
And people are following it. Here's where I lost them. When De Niro's at the bar with Pesci and De Niro says to that guy, "Excuse me, is this your pen?" And the guy says, "What the F is it to you, you dumb fag?" And then Joe Pesci takes the pen and stabs the guy repeatedly with.
In the throat.
In the throat.
Uh-huh. Right.
Now, at this moment, up until this scene, the movie's on, some people are watching, some people are talking. This scene comes on, silence.
Uh-huh.
I've had a glass of wine, and I started laughing. I started laughing. I said, "Oh, this is what this movie is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Watch. And there's eight other people who are standing around, and they're looking at me, and it's the part of the movie where Joe Pesci's kicking the guy.
Right.
Now the guy's on the ground. He's kicking.
He makes fun of him for crying.
And he goes,
"Now you're crying."
He goes, "Do you hear anything? I hear a little girl crying." And the guy's on the ground going, "Please, I didn't mean anything by it. Please." And I'm laughing so much that tears are nearly coming out of my eyes. And I'm looking around the room and I'm seeing that this sentiment is not felt by the other people.
The laughter, are their eyes on you at this point?
So at this point, I pause the movie and I say, "Listen, this is a movie I watch all the time. I've watched it with my friends."
You're desensitized.
That's exactly what I said. I'm desensitized. I promise.
You wouldn't, you know what? I would go, though, as far as say, you wouldn't laugh the first time you saw it. Nobody laughs the first time you see it. You laugh after you've been desensitized. The only person that laughs when he sees things like that for the first time is Freddie Camp.
Now we continue to watch the movie. And I'm being a good guest. I'm making small talk. I'm eating my popcorn. I'm filling people in on the plot. Now they want to find out the guy who talked. Oh, and we go past the scene where they break the guy's hand with a hammer.
Yeah. Did you get to the scene where he's got the guy's head in a vice?
That's the next scene.
Okay.
Now, the scene where he breaks the guy's hand with a hammer, you know, because they're cheating, I preface this by saying, I'm not going to laugh, but you should all know nobody gets seriously hurt here, that they're going to let these guys go.
Are there people that are just having trouble with the content of the movie that are just a little freaked out? Is it a lot of this,
frankly, I think there are some people who are wondering why for a Saturday night neighborhood get-together I brought this movie.
Sure. Are you, you know, regretting the fact that you didn't bring, like, Arthur up or something like that?
No. Because Casino's a great movie.
It's a great movie, yeah.
Now, We're to the scene now where the guy won't talk.
That's the most gratuitously violent scene in the movie.
They've beaten the crap out of this guy.
That next to the end of the movie.
Yeah, oh, which we never got to, incidentally.
Oh. Best violent scene, well, would you not agree?
Yes, but it's because we got to the scene where they put the guy's head in the vise. Mm. And I announced, now I have everyone's attention. The movie's on, all the conversation has stopped. I said, okay, now I'm going to warn you. Joe Pesci's going to turn this vise. And the guy's not going to give up the name until after his eyeball pops out of the socket.
Okay. But you don't really see that.
No, but...
It's not like, you know... So, I mean, you're warning them, but it's not like it's going to go, bam, shoot across the room or something like that.
But
it's gross.
It's gross.
We have it on tape.
And as a... Yeah, Rob, go get me this scene, because I want to... I just want to read for
Charlie M.? You made me do this to you.
Is it Charlie M? Is that what I guess?
Yeah, it's
Charlie M.
Charlie M.
You piece of ass.
Now, as we're watching this, I can't help myself. I'm laughing. So I set it up and I say, this is a scene with gratuitous violence, but it's very important towards the tone of the movie. So now everybody's watching.
Dogs. Dogs, can you hear me, dogs? Listen to me, Anthony. I got your head in a vice. Wash your head like a grapefruit.
I'm already laughing like I am now. Okay.
Don't make me have to do this, please. Come on. Don't make me be a bad guy. Come on. You. Motherfucker. You believe this? 2 days a night. Me.
I'm saying to my friends, look at this. He's saying F you.
My mother. But you. You, huh? Oh, God. Give me the name.
Charlie M.
Charlie M?
Charlie M.
Charlie M? You make me pop your eye out of your head to protect that piece of Charlie M? You dumb mother. You mother. You. Bring. Do him a favor.
Okay. Now, I have the same reaction listening to the tape as I do when I'm sitting there watching.
Right.
I'm laughing.
they're getting grossed out by
I'm laughing, and at that point, somebody else reaches over and takes the remote, which is on the table, and stops the film and says...
Just turns it off altogether?
Yes, stops it. Uh-huh. Doesn't freeze frame it.
Right.
Stops it.
Right.
Says, I think we've seen enough of this. And I said, no, listen. I'm just laughing because I've seen it. And then I make the fatal mistake. I say, later in the movie, you got to see when Don Rickles gets hit in the head with a telephone. James Woods gets beat up
right.
by Robert De Niro's boyfriends. And at the very end of the movie,
Joe Pesci
and his brother, they both get beaten to death with baseball bats out the desert. And as I'm saying it, I can't help myself. I'm laughing. I'm laughing as I'm saying it. And I'm looking around the room for anyone who supports me.
People are looking at a monster.
And nobody does. And at that point, they go to the machine. They pop out the thing. Uh-huh. They put it in the box. Yeah. And they give it back to me.
You go enjoy it yourself.
They give it back to me. And then...
None of the guys were kind of like, hey, keep it on or anything? There was
no
groundswell of...
There was not.
I mean, a lot of people get freaked out by movies like that.
There was
the only reason, you know, we're like this, because we become desensitized to the violence, because we see it again and again and again.
And there was one guy in particular who I was looking for support from, and I don't know if it's because he's PW'd or maybe he really is offended by this, but, like, he looked at me directly. He was sitting on this couch with his legs up, and he was having a glass of scotch, and... When this is happening, I'm laughing. And you know how sometimes when something's really not even funny?
Right.
If you see somebody else laugh, it's kind of contagious.
You chuckle.
You chuckle. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at him like...
Go on.
And he's looking at me like... I don't get it.
No.
I don't get it.
Maybe does that mean like we're the only ones that laugh at that?
No, there's got to be lots of people that laugh at that.
I'm sure.
But at that point...
But I think it's important to point out... We don't laugh the first time. You don't laugh the first time you see it because it catches you by surprise. And in fact, everybody has the same reaction the first time you see it.
But this is where I dig myself in a bigger hole because now they give it to me. And I say, okay, well, maybe it wasn't the right movie to watch. You know, a pick-me-up. I said, but I laugh because I've seen the movie maybe
25 times. And I realize as I've announced that I've seen the movie 25 times, that I'm appearing to be an even bigger idiot. We're watching one of the most violent movies ever made. I'm laughing at it. And it's so funny, I've seen it 25 times.
For the comedic value.
Yes.
But you don't watch it for the comedic value, you watch it because it's a good movie.
I watch it, it's a fantastic movie. Visually, it's fantastic. The colors are great. All of the acting in the movie is great. I mean,
it's a great DVD.
Yes, De Niro's great. Alan King, who I hate, he's great when he's setting it up.
He gets killed, too.
Yeah, he does.
Bam, bam, bam. But very casually they shoot him.
Yeah.
He falls in between the two cars.
Oh, that's, yeah, right into the snow.
Pop, 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 pop.
Bang, bang, eat my Luger. So that was not good.
Not good. Well, what was the fallout after that?
Did
you leave?
I left.
Did you really?
Well, I wasn't asked to leave. The party continued.
I would hope not.
They put on some, on the satellite, some like light jazz channel, and people just started talking and stuff, and I realized that I'm sitting there holding my movie, and nobody's like coming to my rescue.
Were you embarrassed? At this, were you, I mean,
no,
were,
not no. really.
I mean, were they, it weren't, was, they weren't oogie about it, right?
No, they weren't. It was just, they said, this is, you know, this is not the right time or place to watch a film like this.
Right. Their opinion of you has not changed because of
this. Oh, no, they thought I was a dick before I ever came down with the movie. And, frankly, it was getting late, and I said, well, you know
what? What did your wife have to say about all this?
Oh, she was across the room. She had, you know, nothing to say.
Mm-hmm.
She had nothing to say about it. She was, I believe she was immersed in some discussion about going to London at some point with these neighbors of ours. You know, always thinking about ways to spend my money. So, I don't know, I sat there for about 20 more minutes, and then at one point I got up and I said, well, I guess, held the movie head like this, and I said, well, I guess I'll be making the walk back down the street. Thanks, it was a great time, and everybody was very nice, said thanks. You know, you don't have to leave. Please don't leave on our account. And I said, No. You're having a good time listening to your smooth jazz and, you know, and enjoying your popcorn.
I hold in my hands a lot of gratuitous violence that we can all enjoy together.
I'll take this down the street, and, you know, next time I'll know better. I said, next time I'll bring Jerry Maguire. Yeah. That's one you'll love.
Sure, nice romantic comedy.
And I ended up leaving, and,
Let's go back and get Falling Down.
And it's a that's another great one to laugh at.
Well, that's the one where, I made the horrible mistake of going up to visit my mom with my wife.
Oh, yeah.
And we took her to that. I thought it would be an interesting movie. Oh, was I wrong? You know, you get a few of the, when he goes into the vigilante shop, remember the